Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I can watch that 44 pair of socks and have them on the line. You know, I can start your 92 dozen shirts where you can count from 1 to 9. I can sip up a great big dip of a lard from a dripping can, throw it in the skillet. I do my shopping in me back before it melts in the pan, 'cause I'm a woman. W-O-M-A-N. Let me tell you again. The car and powder my nose at the same time. You know, I can't get all dressed up, go out and swing with the M-A-N. Jump in bed at 5, sleep to 6, and start all over again. 'Cause I'm a woman. W-O-M-A-N. Let me tell you again. Sick, you know that I'm not gonna make you well. And if you come to me all hexed up, you know I'm not gonna break a spell. And if you come to me hungry, you know I'll feed you full of my grits. And if you're loving you won't, I can kiss you and give you the shivering fits. 'Cause I'm a woman. W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again.
And welcome to Woman Patriots. Tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about feminism and the recent headlines that have been out coming out about this war on women. Recently the press and the current administration have been saying that the Republicans have waged a war on women. They say that not providing free birth control pills affect a woman's health, which we will get into a little bit later. But during the primaries, where the women came out in numbers for Rick Santorum in Alabama and Mississippi, MSNBC analysis Karen Finney said, "This woman vote really hurts me." Working women went for Rick Santorum at 49%. And that may be very well how he won the thing, said O'Donnell. But that's why I say Finney injected. It's a little painful because I'm wondering if these women really heard the message that, yes, there's the economy, but if you've got to worry about your basic health care, how are you then going to be able to do what you need to do in terms of having a job, paying your rent, taking care of your kids? she has some kind of nerve to say she was hurt by these women. Hurt? Really? I'm not really getting that. But last but not least, we have Pennsylvania State Representative Babette Joseph, who called Republican women who supported the state's ultrasound bill men with breasts. Now, I'm going to ask you to consider, who is waging war here? Why must all women think alike? Are we not individuals with our own ideals and concerns? Are we not allowed to be informed and educated and disagree because we are women? What sense does do any of these comments make? Am I not allowed as a woman to believe in marriage and the sanctity of that institution? Well, apparently not. Why? Because the feminist movement says so. Well, tonight we're going to take a little bit of a look at the feminist movement and its goals. I think first we'll define feminism. Feminism is a theory of the political, economic, and social equality of the sexes. Organized activity on behalf of women's rights and interests that doesn't sound too bad, equality in the workplace and at home. But as we look further, we see different types of feminism. There's social feminism. This theory is that capitalism and patriarchy as relative autonomous dual systems of power, meaning men at the head, you know, and capitalism, tending to reinforce one another, but not necessarily. Socialism alone hasn't and won't liberate women. Parallel influences of capitalism and patriarchy reflected in feminization of poverty. And although many feminist organizations have become more class conscious and committed to building feminism into a broader radical movement, only the DSA Feminist Communist Commission today represents a true dual system analysis of current policies. There are other kinds of feminism. There's the Marxist feminism theory. Women are primarily oppressed by capitalism as workers, class more primary than gender as a social cleavage. Socialist revolution will liberate women. The feminist aspect of most social organizations in the U.S. today, but most clearly expressed by the West Coast Freedom Socialist Party Radical Women. So the Marxist feminist theory is the most prevalent in the United States. We have the radical feminist theory, where women are oppressed by patriarchy, gender more than primary class. This is represented in the United States today by legal theorist Catherine McKinnon and writer Andrea Dworkin. And then you have your lesbian feminist theory. Women are oppressed by both patriarchy and compulsory heterosexuality. Lesbianism and gender separation are the only path to liberation for women. In the U.S., usually associated with the National Organization of Women, through radicals, actually have a lot of influence in now. Okay, so there are different fractions of feminism, each believing a little bit of different things, but we need to find out what are their goals. And as the last group said, that was influenced by the National Organization of Women. Well, the National Organization for Women is the largest organization of feminist activists in the United States. It has 500,000 contributing members and 550 chapters in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Since its founding in 1966, NOW's goal has been to take action to bring about equality for all women. NOW works to eliminate discrimination and harassment in the workplace, schools, the justice system, and all other sectors of society. Secure abortion, birth control, and reproductive rights for all women. And all forms of violence against women, eradicate racism, sexism, and homophobia, and promote equality and justice in our society. And here is where we begin to see it's not just about gaining equal pay for doing the same job. It is not about being able to apply for the same job as men, nor is it about working outside the home. We see here in this statement that there is a wider agenda at play. It's about receiving special treatment, about having authority over males, about selling lesbianism as the only way for women to be free, and selling abortions as birth control. Now, I and Billy have talked about this many times, but these issues I have a lot of problems with because not all women feel this way. And, being a feminist should be more about having a choice as a woman. However, as we've seen in these statements, they don't want women to have the choice to stay home and raise their family and their kids. They think that there's something wrong with that. They have fought long and hard so that women can get out of the house and that the health child care has to be provided by the working place. And, I'm not saying those are bad things, but where they don't draw the line is they want reproductive care paid for by the government, as we've seen in the Sandra Fluke case, which I'm sorry, but birth control is not health care. That is a totally separate issue. It has nothing to do with health care or a health care right. If you don't want to have a baby, don't be having sex. It's very simple, very easy. Or you go get a prescription and go to Walmart where you can get $4 birth control pills. There is no reason in this world why the government should be paying for birth control for women. That is not a woman's health issue. In fact, they've done recent studies, and I've even pulled up the study for tonight because I know I've talked about this before, but I pulled up the study. And this was a recent study because, pills used to be stronger than they are now. And this was published on May 2009. And this study linked birth control pills to rare breast cancer. And what do they mean by rare breast cancer? Well, there's a type of breast cancer that is a triple negative. It's negative for progesterone, negative for estrogen, and negative for HER2 receptors, okay? What this means is this is a very aggressive type breast cancer that we can't treat with hormonal pills such as tamoxifen, and it's not sensitive to the chemotherapy, okay? Well, this study reveals that a year or more of oral contraceptive use was associated with 4.2-fold increased risk of triple-negative breast cancer for women 40 and under. 40 and under. Already, our chance for curing women that get breast cancer under the age of 40 are slimmer because already they have increased hormones than you do after the age of 40, because as you get older, your hormones start decreasing, and a lot of breast cancers are fed by hormones, although in the case of the triple negative, that's not necessarily true. Longer duration of use and early age of first use further increased risk. Researchers did not find increased risk from pill use among women 41 to 45 years of age. The population-based study was of nearly 900 breast cancer cases, the largest of its kind to evaluate breast cancer subtypes and etiologic differences in young women. It was published April 1st in the journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention. Now, those are big words. Biomarkers, basically, they have gene typing that they can do now with breast cancers, which we routinely do on all stage 1 breast cancers. It's called a BRCA gene. And they test for these because whether or not you have this gene indicates whether or not you need chemotherapy before you get radiation. But the two things that were surprising in this study, once they sorted it out into triple negative or not triple negative, it appears that most of the increased risk in this age group related to pill use was confined to the relatively small fraction of cases with triple negative breast cancer. And second, the risk associated with the pill use for triple negative cases was quite large, 4 to 5-fold increases in risk. Outside of radiation, the BRCA1, BRCA2 genes, these are considerably higher risks than we tend to see in breast cancer studies. So there you have it. They want to talk about health care and health risk. You have an increased risk of getting a triple negative breast cancer, which is a highly aggressive breast cancer at a young age, and you're probably going to die from that breast cancer. And yet they want to provide these free in the issue of health. And as Billy and I have talked about before, they also carry the risk of blood clots, which leads to increased risk of stroke or even a heart attack. They also carry increased risk I've lost my train of thought, but like stroke and heart attack. So those are things that you don't hear when you're taking the pill. Now, I'm not saying they're not relatively safe, because they are, but they've also shown an increase between the time if you take them for 5 years before your first child, that there's also an increase in breast cancer. So try to sell these as harmless pills, and that this is in the name of women's health, that the government has to provide them free, it's just utter nonsense. Again, they're just trying to use the women and the cause to push the health care on to everyone. And not only just with the birth controls, because, you know, the birth control issue also goes to the First Amendment rights, because they're trying to force the Catholic Church to pay for them. And the Catholic Church, even if it was their insurance, a lot of them are self-insured. And they're not going to do this, as is their First Amendment right. And I don't blame them. So that's just some of my thoughts as far as, you know, this thing with the women's health and the war on women that they've been waging. We also see that the NOW wants to promote abortions. And unfortunately, there are many of us out there, fortunately, I should say, many of us out there that do not believe in killing a baby in the name of health care or women's rights. We know that this case was ruled on back in 1973 by the Supreme Court. Well, back in 1973, they didn't have the technology that we have today. Today, we have technology, so we can see exactly when life begins. And we can see these children at 12 to 15 weeks of age with all their fingers and their toes, their heartbeat, sucking their thumb, kicking their feet. These are little children, and yet they don't want to do ultrasounds. And the reason they don't want to do ultrasounds, and they want to call it rape, which I find very degrading, because it is not a rape. If you had a cancer or a tumor, you would more than happily go through this ultrasound. You know, how did you get pregnant in the first place? This is in no way comparative to rape, and I think it's degrading to women for them to even bring up that subject in context with having an ultrasound. They find that when you have these ultrasounds, that 80% of the people coming in will not have that abortion. 80%. So I'm asking you, you go in for surgery and the doctor has to do the test. They have to explain the test to you and they have to talk to you about the complications of surgery. But in the case of abortion, you walk in the door, they don't tell you anything. They suck the baby to pieces and out you go. Something not right about that. And we see what, if you really look at it, with 80% decrease in the abortion rate, somebody's going to lose money with that. And not just money, as we talked about also before, Margaret Sanger, the whole purpose of Planned Parenthood was population control. And so the birth control pills and the abortions buy into that theory. Now, I'm going to encourage anybody, if you're out there, to go ahead and call in. We have guest line 718-305-7176. I'm just currently going over some of those things this week that were brought out, people complaining, you know, about the war on women and having men with breasts, which that one with the ultrasound, I found that to be most degrading for women. Because you know what? I'm not a man with breasts. I am a woman. I have my own opinion and I am an educated woman. And I do not agree with the feminist movement. I do not agree that I need to be equal. I myself know that I am not physically as strong as a man. I know that. We're built differently. Most women will admit that, although some in this movement will not. But then you were asked, I also said we were going to talk a little bit about communism. And you're probably thinking, well, what does all this have to do with communism? Well, if you go back and look, you go back and you look at the goals that were listed in 1958 in the Naked Communist. Also, again, entered into the Congressional Record in 1963 were the current communistic goals, in order to turn America into a socialistic, communistic state. And people try to say, this has no relevance today. But it does, people. What has relevance today, because they're trying to turn us into a one-world order. And in order to do that, they have to take away the sovereignty of the United States of America. So when we talk about this election being bigger than you and bigger than I and bigger than just a regular presidential election, that's what we're talking about. On this list, there's 46 things on this list. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm just going to go through what I feel kind of pertains to the feminist movement. Originally, socialists and communism, they wanted to use the unions and the workers to uprise against the capitalists, kind of the class warfare that we see that Obama is trying to implement today between the classes. And that's the typical way that you turn it into a socialistic state. They found that this wasn't working so well in the United States, and so they found another movement to use to their advantage, and that, I submit to you, is the feminist movement, which was started basically in 1966. The Now was started by Betty, I think, Friedman. Anyway, I was going through this list, and on this list, there are several things that we can apply to the feministic movement. And it has to do with morals. It has to do with number 19, use student riots to format public protests against programs, organizations which are under communist attack. What did you see at the Supreme Court? Not riots. But you did see protesters out with their signs protesting that, you know, the healthcare is a right and you can't take this away from us. You also see these protests anywhere. You see them at the abortion clinics. You see the pro-abortion. You see the protests going on by the pro-choice. So through protests, this is one of the goals that they used to promote uprising and to push agendas through in the United States. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press. Break down social cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. We see on TV, we see the broken families, we see the divorce, we see the promiscuity that goes on. Number 26, present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as natural, normal, and healthy. Infiltrate the churches. Number 27, replace revealed religion with social religion. And we see that again in the churches where they're starting to swing that there's gayness is not wrong. It's not not in the Bible, which is not true. And we have gay ministers in some of the churches. They're trying to discredit the Bible. The Bible also teaches that, you know, the man is the head of the house, as Christ is the head of the church. And yet, as the feminists want it to be, they don't want to have men have any control or be perceived as in any way as the head of the household. So that's one of the ways it's used. And here it is in number 32, support any socialist movement to give centralized control over any part of the culture. And this is where the feminist movement comes in. It is a socialist movement that they have used to push their agenda through education, social agencies, Planned Parenthood, welfare programs, and mental health clinics. This discredits the family as an institution. Again, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. And emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. This, my friends, is how we tie the socialist movement or the feminist movement into the socialist movement or into the communist movement. And you might say, well, that's a far stretch. Well, I'm not done yet. Let me read to you from the Communist Party USA's constitution that defines the working class as a class which is multiracial, multinational, and unites men and women, young and old, employed and unemployed, organized and unorganized, gay and straight, native-born and immigrant, urban and rural, and composed of workers who perform a large range of physical and mental labor, the vast majority of a society. The Communist Party seeks equal rights for women, equal pay for equal work, the protection of reproductive rights, together with putting an end to sexism. The party's rank include a Women's Equality Commission, which recognizes the role of women as an asset in moving towards building socialism. And there it is for you folks, right into in the Communistic Party's definition of what they are trying to do. They are using the feminist movement to push through the social agenda of the Socialistic Communistic Party. And then ultimately, this is going to lead to the end of the United States as we know it. As we know, the Communist Party opposed the U.S. involvement in Vietnam War. Well, who was the chief protester during that war? You know, Jane Fonda, okay, who today states that she is scared of the Republicans. Well, why is she scared of the Republicans? Unless somebody is indoctrinating them with views and opinions that that are different than what we actually are as people. Again, I want to encourage you to call in if you have any thoughts or any comments you want to share. Today, it's pretty scary what's going on in America. We've talked about many issues, but a lot of people, I don't think, have tied in the feminist movement with all that's going in around us. And I would say to these women that are hurt by the fact that some women voted for Rick Santorum, as I will be voting for Rick Santorum, that, you know, we don't feel that abortion is anybody's right because we feel like you are taking the life of a child. You want choices? There's choices out there. We don't need these radical movements in our country to keep pushing forward with the social agendas, with the affirmative actions, because we are at a point in America where I believe if you want to get a job, you can. I have never in my life been denied a job because I am a woman. I've never been put down because I'm a woman. And I've never not received equal pay because I am a woman. Now, I know this may still occur in some places, but there is no way in the world that anything is going to change in those areas if it hasn't already. And it's certainly not going to change through legislation and more government involvement in our lives. That is not going to help us as a whole. Right now, one of the biggest problems we have is there's too much money and too much corruption in Washington and in the government. Medicare, socialized medicine, as Ronald Reagan called it, is currently only reimburses people at about, or doctors at about 20 to 30% on the dollar of what it costs to provide care. There's already doctors refusing to see Medicare patients. And yet, under the next health care plan, not only did they take money from Medicare, but payments to doctors is going to decrease. They're paying 20 to 30 cents on the dollar. They're not even covering the actual cost of what it costs to provide that health care. And I will leave you to kind of decide what that's actually going to do to this country and the health care when we have less doctors. You know, how long are you going to have to wait in line to see that doctor? Or we don't have the latest technology. Or the death panels, as Sarah Palin referred to them, as the committee that's going to decide whether you're going to get paid or not. So instead of the doctor making the choice for the patient, not based on the physical condition of the patient, because I've seen some 80-year-olds who look like they're 50, but based on a piece of paper that says, oh, this person's 70 years old, so no, they don't need that care. Just like we have seen, and we saw this in the press, we saw this with the hateful comments about Vice President Cheney receiving a heart transplant at the age of 71, how he shouldn't have gotten that heart transplant. Who are they to make those choices for you? Who do they think they are? It's the government. And why? Because they want to gain control of the people of this country. I'm going to play for you a little bit of Ronald Reagan. This is one of my favorite clips that I have on the show, talking more about the socialized medicine. And we're just going to go ahead and play that.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, six times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the a method of earning a living. Our government is in business to the extent of owning more than 19,000 businesses covering 47 different lines of activity. This amounts to a fifth of the total industrial capacity of the United States. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us and at the moment is more imminent. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose, would unhesitatingly vote against it. We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course, the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine, Congressman Farrand introduced the Farrand Bill. This was the idea that all people of Social Security age should be brought under a program of compulsory health insurance. Now, this would not only be our senior citizens, this would be the dependents and those who are disabled. This would be young people if they are dependents of someone eligible for Social Security. Now, Congressman Farrand brought the program out on that idea of just for that particular group of people. But Congressman Farrand was subscribing to this foot-in-the-door philosophy because he said, if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that.
Door philosophy, and look where that has us today. Now, with the Supreme Court set to be ruling on the constitutionality of individual health care mandates, forcing us all to take out health insurance or pay a penalty. And unfortunately, it's not even a good plan. And we can see that if we go look at the plan in New Hampshire or Massachusetts, I'm sorry, the Romney Care plan, where they have it's cost millions of dollars to the average taxpayer. You and I are actually paying for Massachusetts' health care plan through Medicaid and through the government for what the plan doesn't cover. And people having to pay premiums and not be able to use medical care in Massachusetts. And we see the same thing is going to be happening here already. Everybody, if you have health insurance, it went up. Either your health insurance, the cost of health insurance went up, or your co-pays went up. That is a result of Obamacare. And it hasn't even really gone into effect yet. We're not going to see the major effects of Obamacare until after the main election and in 2013. We are going to see a large exodus. 43% of the doctors surveyed said that they would be leaving practice once if Obamacare is implemented. 43%. That's not far from half of the doctors in the United States. 43% of doctors will be leaving healthcare if Obamacare is implemented. Think of the ramifications of that nationwide when you're trying to get in because you have, you know, a fever or a sore throat or just even something minor. Heaven forbid, it be something major that you're trying to get in for. 43% of the doctors. This is not a plan that is good for anybody in America. Who wants the government running anything? Look at Social Security. Social Security today would not be broke, except for the government. The corrupt, and when I say government, I'm talking Republicans, I'm talking Democrats, and I'm talking president, I'm talking the corrupt, greedy money people that are behind the lobbyists that are in the government. Because these people don't care about you and I. It's all about the money, the bottom dollar line. How much money can they make off of this? It's about enslaving the American people, making them pay more and receiving less freedom for that money. But they've decided that they need to take care of us. But unfortunately, this health care bill didn't do anything about the problem in America. And the problem is a health care cost problem. It's how much it costs to receive that health care. But this bill does nothing to cut down on the cost of health care. The cost of health care, there's a number of different issues. Well, one of the issues we see is that people who have Medicaid or no insurance going to emergency rooms to receive care. Well, as you or I know, when you go to the emergency room, they have to charge you for the room, and they have to charge you for the nurses and the doctors and everything that's going on there. And these are people coming in because they have a sore throat or their child's running a fever, things that people like you or I who have insurance have to go to our family doctor first, because if we don't, we end up paying out of pocket for that emergency room visit. So one of the things they need to do is they need to ensure that anyone without insurance or on a Medicaid needs to have a family doctor that they go to for their regular health care needs. This alone would save money, because compared to going to the regular doctors or the emergency room and the cost involved in each of those, just for those simple matters. But does this health care law address that? No, not at all. Does it allow you to buy insurance across state lines so you can be competitive? I don't know, for some reason, and I didn't research this thoroughly, but for some reason, you know, here in Indiana, I can't go across the state line and buy health insurance from Alabama that might be cheaper for me to go that way. So there's like a monopoly in the state on what they can charge individuals for this health care. Open up those borders. Let people shop around like they do for their auto insurance. The competitiveness alone will bring down the cost of that health care. Or allow the American public to be a collective group when buying health care. This is how organizations like General Electric get discounts on their rates, because they buy as a group. Well, the American people themselves, who are self-employed, ought to be a group. And they ought to be able to buy that insurance policy at a reduced rate. Another problem we have in America is we have frivolous lawsuits. Everybody sues for everything. Well, when you sue, somebody pays for that money. And it's usually the consumer. In this case, the other patient seeking medical care. Doctors have to pay for that malpractice insurance that they have to carry to cover these frivolous lawsuits. We need what we call tort reform. Tort reform limits the amounts that you can recover on any kind of medical malpractice suit. You know, and I agree, there are some instances where there is indeed medical malpractice, and indeed the victims need help. But we have too many instances in America of frivolous lawsuits, of people being rewarded even if they don't deserve those lawsuits. And we found this situation with Herman Cain when, and this was not a medical thing, but this sexual harassment lawsuits filed when he was part of the NRA that were settled out of court for $30,000, because it would have cost more to go to court and defend it rather than just pay the people for the supposed sexual harassment. This is the same thing in the medical profession. These lawsuits, it's sometimes just cheaper to pay them, you know, rather than go to court, whether they have any supporting evidence or not that it was medical malpractice. So tort reform is another way to reform the cost of health care. One of the highest costs, and I don't know if you know this, it's kind of a simple fact, for malpractice suit is for OBGYN or delivering babies. And that is because, you know, many people expect a happy event when we're having a child, but childbirth has always been a dangerous area for women. If you go and do any kind of research as far as genealogy, you see that there are many women died in childbirth. or after childbirth. And it happens today, not as often as it did then. Or, you know, sometimes the child is born with a cord around its neck where it has suffocated before it was born. So that is one of the highest areas where there is the malpractice insurance. And if you wonder why your family doctor quit delivering babies, well, that's why mine did, was because of the insurance costs involved. So there are many ways that we can reform the cost of health care without infringing on the rights of the American people the way that this Obamacare bill does. But again, you know, is birth control pills, is that actually a healthcare issue or a right? And if anybody has anything they'd like to add to that, please feel free to call in 718-305-7176. To me, that is a choice. You know, that is a choice you make. And like I said, if you want, all you need is a doctor's prescription, $4 pills at Walmart, $9 pills at Target. That's a lot cheaper than your cell phone bill. It's a lot cheaper than your cable bill, your high Wi-Fi bill for your computer, your lattes you get at a coffee shop. This is just common sense, people. Not to mention, and again, Billy and I have talked about this before on our show, that even if you're taking those birth control pills, because of the type of diseases that are out there that can kill you, HPV virus. The HPV virus is a sexually transmitted disease. You need to be sure that you're using protected sex with condoms. So it's not just about, you know, having a birth control to prevent childbirth. How many women out there are using birth control pills and men don't use those condoms? Because they have a sense of security that they're not going to get pregnant. Well, you might not get pregnant, but you might get a virus that causes cancer. It causes cervical cancer. It causes head and neck cancers in males. That's like cancers of the tongue, cancers of the throat, those kind of cancers. Sexually transmitted disease that causes cancer. 21 million suspected infected young adults with the HPV virus. And instead of preaching abstinence, what do? Oh, you need to pay for my birth control. Oh, no, we need to have this freedom to have sex all we want to. Oh, you people are just haters. You people that believe in the Bible and that think marriage is one man, one woman, and that a family is important. Again, these are all parts of the communistic goals, the socialistic goals to tear down America, is to keep infiltrating us with those beliefs. Now, and I also, in our segment, I want to talk a little bit about racism in America. And as I read earlier in the Now statements, they want to secure, they want to help with this, the racism also that goes on in America, as they do with feminism. I think they treat them as the same, because minorities and females are discriminated against. And we also see that as part of the Communistic Party definition, where they want to unite men and women of all orientations, all races, together. But do we really need these excessive laws? And do we really have who actually is promoting the racism in America? Well, if you listen to the Democrats and their followers, they're going to tell you it's the Republicans and the Tea Party, that we're all racist and we're bigots, which is kind of news to me, because I myself am not a racist. I don't think in terms of colors. I was taught to respect people for their actions and their behavior, not for the color of their skin or their sex. And I bet that many of you also were taught that same thing. But we get to the point where it's a collective reasoning. This is why Karen Finney was upset that these women voted for Rick Santorum, because in socialism, you have a collective group. We as women are a collective group. We as women have to think as one. We have to support each other. We can't think as in, there are no individuals. There are no classes. There are, you're all one. And unfortunately, we are individuals, and I like my individuality, and I like the individuality of my friends and my neighbors and my coworkers. And I think that's a part of what makes us who we are. But we have seen, and I'm going to wade in deep here with this Trayvon case down in Florida. What I would like to refer to as racial baiting. They're using race and trying to start trouble in a case where they have didn't have the facts. We still don't have all the facts, but the facts that are coming out are not actually in support of Trayvon. But we had a media frenzy, a media feeding on this one shooting on a man who was not arrested. He was taken in for questioning, but he wasn't convicted of a crime. Now, first of all, common sense tells me that if the police question you and they let you go and there were no charges pending, that there had to be some kind of evidence to base that on. But instead, we see people like Al Sharpton on TV trying to make this a racial issue, because initially it was reported that this was a white man that committed the crime. But as we find out, as we get into this, he's actually Hispanic. He's half Hispanic. So we have a minority on minority crime, but the ball is already rolling. We got a group called the Black Panthers out there putting a bounty on a man's head. When the police know where this man is and they let him go, ruled it as self-defense. And so many people willing to jump on that bandwagon about how wrong this is and how awful it is. And that to call me names that I dared to comment that racial baiting is wrong and trying to incite racial tension and racial mobs is wrong, has no place in America at this date and time. You know, the Republicans are not the party of the Ku Klux Klan. We're not the party that keeps the minorities in poverty. We're the party that wants to give everybody an equal chance to climb that ladder, to get out of their present situation, to give them hope here in America that there is a better life for them out there. The Republicans want to do that. They want to give that to people. Whereas Jesse Jackson, Al Franken, even our own president had his staff go out and hand a note to the reporter so that he could specifically be asked a question about Trayvon, so that he could say his son would look like that. Again, playing on emotions. Playing on emotions instead of on reality and the facts. But that's not the only case. You know, where is our president? Okay, our president called and apologized to Sandra Fluke. She didn't call and apologize to Sarah Palin or to Sarah Palin's daughter, who was ridiculed, mocked, and called names by the liberal media. But Rush Limbaugh dared to insinuate, you know, that somebody might be a slut, and he gets crucified on the press, and he gets crucified by the administration, and this woman gets an apology. No apology to the Border Patrol family, who was killed because of the guns that this administration let walk across the border. No apology there. No apology to the families of the soldiers who were shot in this Quran burning in Afghanistan. Six assassinated because of that. But an apology to the Afghan president. Oh, let's be sure and apologize to the right people. No apologies to the 13-year-old boy that was set on fire by three black youth, and it screamed, "Die, Whitey." Where's the outrage in that? That's racism, folks. You know, Holder, our current Department of Justice, Eric Holder, won't prosecute any black-on-white crimes because that's not racism. I don't know about you, but folks, I think racism comes in all colors, and it comes in all shapes and all forms. It doesn't have to be a minority for it to be racism. Anytime somebody is judged because of the color of the skin, whether it be black, yellow, white, is racism. Or what about, why do we not hear about the 6 murders that happened in Chicago? Okay, Chicago with their gun laws and their restrictions of guns for the people to protect themselves with, but the gang shootings that go on there. Why do we not hear about that? Because, once again, it's black on black. And so they can't call racism. They can't bring that to your attention because that indicates there's a bigger problem in the minorities of America and in the poorer sections of America that needs to be addressed, which they have not addressed in the 40 years that they have been supported by the minority groups. And yes, they want to blame the Republicans. It's all the Republicans' fault. You know, I don't know. He had total control of Congress. Total control. Total control never happened in history. It happened in 2008. It happened in 2008 because we had many voters going to the polls that never voted before, who didn't understand how the system worked. Most times, your average voters will go and they'll give power to the president, but they won't give total power to the Senate and the House so that one party has total control in the government. It doesn't happen because you have to have that 60 votes in the Senate because there's checks and balances. But in 2008, this president, this administration had total control of not only the House and the Senate, but the presidency. And what did they do with that? Have they passed a budget? No. I think that's intentional, even though constitutionally they're supposed to pass a budget. I think intentionally they haven't passed a budget because then they don't have to live within the budget and the president is free to spend as much money as he wants. Again, the House put out a budget, went to the Senate, never gets voted on because the Senate is still controlled by the Democrats. And for some reason, people keep trying to say it's the Republicans at fault. I'm not getting that. It's all about education. We need to educate the public. And a lot of people in this election, they're looking for electability against President Obama. Some people think anybody can beat him. I myself, having talked to people, having been out there in the field, I'm not seeing it. There's some people that think he's actually doing a good job with the economy because all they listen to is the mainstream media, which is telling you that the unemployment numbers are down and that the jobs are coming back and all this wonderful la-la stuff that they're playing with the numbers to get to. When in reality, you know, jobs are down and unemployment is in double digits. And these people are going to vote for him. And unless we, as a party and as concerned Americans, not necessarily a party, you don't have to be Republican. I know we have the Tea Party fraction out there. I consider myself a right-wing Republican. We have our moderates, we have our independents, we even have some Democrats. But in order to win any election, you have to have your base behind you. Well, what is the base? I ask you, what is the base of the Republican Party? What has always been considered the base of the Republican Party is your white right-wing evangelical Christians. In 2008, those people stayed home. They didn't want to vote for McCain. They didn't vote for Dole. They don't vote for these moderate candidates that are put up by the establishment. In 2012, we need to make sure that we have a candidate that is going to bring the people out to vote. In Louisiana, the numbers in the primary were up over the 2008 primary. Those people came out to vote for Rick Santorum. They didn't come out to vote for Mitt Romney. In Louisiana, the only county that Mitt Romney carried was Orleans, where New Orleans is situated at. So in order to bring out the vote in this 2012 election, we need, hey, Billy, is that you?
It is. Hey.
Where you been?
I was going by what you posted. It's at 10 p.m. Central Time.
No,
I was waiting.
9 Eastern.
Eastern. Well, I went by 10 Central, and 10 Central is an hour from now.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know what's going on because I went in there and fixed that to so it would come up 9 Eastern, and it's like it just keeps changing times on me, so I have no idea what that is.
Well, you didn't see the message I put on Facebook because I panicked.
I logged in. Yeah.
I saw your announcement on Herman Cain's Intelligent Thinkers Movement.
Yeah.
And then I clicked on it, and it's like on air, and I'm like on air at 6:55, and I'm like, what?
What?
Yeah.
That's weird. That is really weird.
And then
I changed it
to 10.
Yeah, and then when I got on here, it said there was 2 hours. I got on here at 9. It said 2 hours to showtime. And I thought, what?
Because 9 your time is only 8 my time.
What time is it yours now?
It's 8:58.
It's almost 10 here.
Right.
So when I say 9.
So when you said 9 Eastern, you said 10 Central. It should have been 9 Eastern, 8 Central.
8 Central. Okay, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Because of the time change?
Right.
I'm all confused, obviously. Yeah, I went in and I had reset it to actually, like, on my clock, so it would come up at 9 o'clock my time. And then you saw, I don't know why it started early. I don't know what's going on. It's been doing that to me a lot lately and changing my times on me. And I'm going in like,
at least, like, no abomination. They air it at 7 a.m. instead of p.m., and I have to go in here every Wednesday, check it out, and then it'll say, you know, p.m., and I'll go back on Friday to log in, and it's like, oh, your show already aired. I'm like, what?
Well, I'm glad you caught that because we would have just had a very short show tonight. So, but welcome, because these people have been just listening to me ramble on here. Nobody's calling in, so I'm just talking to myself here. But
there's been a lot of news.
Yeah, there has, actually, and I started the show with this war on women stuff and the feminist movement and how Karen Finney was hurt because of the way the women voted in Mississippi and Alabama. I mean, to me, that's just pathetic. I don't know how you feel about that, but, you know,
You know what's really got me about the whole issue altogether is the fact that, okay, it's like they hate conservatives because we're not on their team. They hate conservative women. They hate conservative blacks. They alienate them, and they call them names. They label them as, you know,
men without breasts.
Right.
Men with breasts. I don't know.
they make such vicious, vile statements that we should have our ovaries taken out just because we're conservative. Now, you know, I'm not someone who's for racism at all. But if there ever was anything to take to court over racism, I would call a lot of the liberal rhetoric hate speech.
Yes,
that
it is.
That needs to be addressed.
That was what I was just talking about when you joined us, was the race baiting that has gone on with the Trayvon case down in Florida.
Well, see, that's a weird situation because let me just ask you. The guy, George Zimmerman, doesn't sound like he's Hispanic, but he is what they call a Hispanic white guy, okay, in the New York Times. That's what he was labeled as.
Yeah, I know. they had to do that because they found out after they started this hoopla that he wasn't white, as reported in the police report.
That is like calling President Obama a white black man.
Yeah, well, that's what he is.
Right?
If you're going to call him a white Hispanic, you're going to call him a white black man. Yes.
Right.
Right.
But they called him a Hispanic white man. I mean, we didn't call President Obama a black white man. That would be how they'd label Herman Cain.
Right. And yet Herman's 100%, you know,
black
American.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. And
they have all these different definitions.
Well, it doesn't fit.
And labels.
It doesn't fit their plan, see, because we were also talking about how many murders happen in Chicago, but they're not made a big deal of because it's black on black. Or
right. Well,
when the
and not only that, even if it is black on white, it doesn't get any recognition.
Right. Where the boy was set on fire, that was black on black.
And they reiterated it yesterday. The same thing Holder said when he first took office. A black man against a white person is not a racist issue. It can't be because the minority can't be in control of any situation.
That's not true.
That doesn't make sense.
That's racist in and of itself.
That's a racist comment.
Yes, exactly.
But liberals don't see that as racist. And liberals don't realize they are the racist group. It's not us who don't embrace other cultures and other people. It's the fact that we don't adopt their ways doesn't mean we don't welcome them into our community.
And don't respect them for their views.
Right.
You know? And that's a whole different, I talked a little bit about that. You know, I was taught you respect the person for their actions, not for the color of their skin. And
I was taught respect your elders. So when I was four, I thought it was okay to beat up on 3-year-olds. My mom switched that around real fast.
Yeah. I was taught to respect your elders, too. And we've lost that in America. We've lost.
No matter culture, race, anything, if they're older than you, they deserve your respect.
Yes. I was taught that, too, which is interesting because when I go out on these sign waves for Rick Santorum, I got people giving me the finger and yelling obscenities out the window, which, you know, it's just rude behavior. It's like they weren't taught better. The next time I think I'm taking a sign, didn't your mama tell you teach you any better? You know, because it's so childish. It's just ridiculous. If you don't like what I'm doing, you don't have to say anything. Give me a thumbs down, but to give me the finger or to yell obscenities out the window when there are children present, that's just rude and disrespectful. And yet that's where our society is. And we have somebody calling in. I'll just check and see who this is.
Okay.
Hi, who do we have Skyping in?
Who do you think this is?
Thomas.
Oh, hey,
Thomas. How are you tonight?
I am well.
That's good to hear. I saw you were having some troubles there, and so it's good to hear that you're doing okay.
I'm glad you're doing okay, too. Speaking of, I guess it's heart troubles that you were having, right?
Yep.
Speaking of all this hate speech and all the heart, you know, your heart troubles and stuff, what do you think of how they're treating Cheney?
I don't even want to touch that one with the 10-foot pole because I will raise my blood pressure 20,000 degrees.
It's a foresight.
It's absolutely terrible, though. I'm furious. I actually heard some of these people saying that Dick Cheney did not deserve to have his heart transplant. He's been waiting 20 months. He's been on the list for 20 months. He wasn't
which
high
is longer,
priority.
Longer than most people.
Longer than most, the average. Because the average wait for a heart transplant is about 12 to 15 months.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and
yeah,
he waited 20 months. And these people on the left are now saying he jumped in line.
What?
And he was treated favorably. He was given a heart that some little kid could have gotten that deserved it. That he's lived, you know, 70 years, let someone else,
that's Obamacare for you right there. 70 years.
Exactly. And that's exactly what they're promoting with that rhetoric.
Yes, absolutely. Which I was talking about earlier. I've seen some 80-year-olds that look like they're 50. You know, you can't.
Oh yeah, my father-in-law, he is 84 now.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be 84 in July, I think. And he is, you know, he's more active than I am at 40.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't go just by age basis.
And I got two kids to run around. So,
yeah.
He doesn't even have kids anymore, but he keeps himself active.
But, yeah, it's between us.
Well, he does have them. He just doesn't have them living with him.
Right. And it's between a patient and a doctor. It's not between the government. It's not between anybody else's opinion on whether he should have had this heart or not. That's not their business.
I am hoping Kennedy sticks to his guns, the guns he had blazing today.
Who's that?
Justice Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, I didn't hear it because I've been, like, preparing for this show and had grandbabies.
Oh, today he was getting down on the government. I guess they said the government lawyer really did not do a good job at all. And Justice Kennedy came right out and said, you know, this isn't something we've ever done. And this isn't something that he thinks is, constitutional.
Yeah.
But he's willing to hear their arguments, but their arguments were very weak. And the thing is, they have to have a good reason to bring the argument. And all they did was basically say, hey, you know, there are mooches out there. There's people out there who don't wait until they don't buy health insurance, and then they wait until they're sick, and then they go to the ER. And junk like that.
So therefore, we mandate everybody carries insurance.
Right.
Yeah.
Because and he did say he was concerned about the number of young people who do it.
Well, they choose not to have insurance because they have other issues that they're more concerned with. So they take
at that age, because you know they're talking about the 26-year-olds. You know, the ones.
Yeah.
That they now have up to 26 on your insurance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Between, I guess, 18 and 26, there's hardly anybody ever enrolling in insurance.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you straight out, I enrolled in my first insurance plan when I was 18. And it was my job came to me and said, hey, you're 18 now. Do you want to enroll in insurance? And I said, yeah, sure. You know? And it was a good plan, and the thing is, I have to speak out on HMOs. It was before HMOs were taken away, but
uh-huh.
I liked my HMO.
Yeah.
I wish they wouldn't have taken it away.
Some of them were actually pretty good, just depending on what kind you got. And we were addressing that a little bit earlier, too, that this health care bill that they've got doesn't address the health care cost issue. And my insurance has gone up. My co-pays have gone up. Your probably has gone up. And you know why it's gone up?
Big time.
Because we're paying for those 26-year-olds to get that insurance. You know,
exactly.
And I have one at home. She's 21. She's going to school. But she would have been covered on my insurance policy till the age of 23 anyway if she was going to school. So, you know.
Right.
And I have a 25 and a 26-year-old. One of them gets insurance from work. The other one pays it out of pocket, you know, because they
right.
have families. But they do that because they have families. And
right,
have
exactly.
So,
that's the responsibility of a family. My husband's in the military. So in the military, they have really good insurance. It's just that 2 years ago, that insurance cost $199 a month for a family of four. Now it's $289 a month.
Right.
So
right.
it's like ridiculously high
right.
for our family to have insurance now.
And like in my daughter's case, she's in Tennessee. And in Tennessee, if you want maternity coverage, you have to add that as a separate rider to your regular coverage. And they didn't tell them this, you know, before she had her last kid. And they had actually asked for it, and the guy told him it would be on there, and it wasn't on their policy. But we were talking about how opening, you know, to control the health care cost, you've got to control the cost of insurance, which you do by
uh-huh.
opening, you know, allowing people to shop around like they do with their car insurance.
Right.
You know, nationwide. You know, right now you're limited, I think, to in-state policies.
We need a Geico for health care.
Yes, exactly.
Or Progressive, but you know.
And you would have that if you open it to competition. Competition drives the price. You know, it drives the price. It absolutely does. And I also brought up that 43% of the doctors, if Obamacare goes into effect, are going to retire.
Uh-huh.
43.
Oh, yeah, and you know, did you hear the biggest news is the number of kids enrolling in medical school has gone down by 14% just since last year. The year before, it went down by 11. It's
People don't even want to get meshed into it. No, because there's not going to be any money to be made, and by the time you're done with 8 years of your life, actually most, they do 8 years, I think 8 years of school and 3 years of residency. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of time they put in to even be able to practice.
And then the liberal argument for it all is they say, oh, well, if you want to be a doctor to make money, that's the wrong reason. Well, but no, you know, a lot of parents want their daughters to marry doctors or lawyers, and they want their sons to become doctors or lawyers. You know, that's just because
it pays well.
You know they'll be well off. They'll be well off. They'll have themselves taken care of for themselves,
right,
by themselves. You don't have to worry about them getting being taken care of. But nowadays, you know, more kids are saying we don't want to get into it. We're not even going to think about it. You know, they might have wanted to a while back, like my son. I can tell you when he was 2 and 3, he liked being the idea of being a doctor. Now that he's 9, he wants to go in the Army.
Yeah, my son wants to do law enforcement. I'm like, you sure you don't want to do engineering? Or
yeah.
No, I want to be.
Well, I got a brother who's in the Army, and he's a firefighter.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a
prize. You know, this goes back to what Sam Thorne says. Not everybody's made to go to college and be that doctor or lawyer. There's people out there that want to do different things, trades and different kinds of things where you don't have to go to college. And I think that's absolutely right on. I'm not going to push my son to do something he doesn't want to do, you know.
Exactly.
People look at me kind of funny when I say he wants to do law enforcement. Well, you know what? That's what he wants to do.
But, you know, there are routes. See, this is kind of like what my mom did with my brother, and I found it very interesting. My brother wanted to play football. My mom decided, well, I don't want you going out for football this year. You take track this year, and then next year I'll set you up with football. And that helped him. It helped him be faster on the field when he took track first. So it kind of comes to, like, a lot of kids that want to go into law enforcement, go into the military, get some discipline through the military first, and then join, like, a law enforcement or a firefighter type thing. And that's exactly how my brother did it on his own eventually. He joined the Army, and now he's in the Army, and he's a reservist, and he's a firefighter. And he looked at it that way because of what my mom did when she made him join track.
Yeah. Well,
so there's other things. There's a route to do it without going to college is what I'm saying. But you still train yourself with your own brain. Your brain tells you how to train yourself into doing it the right way, you know?
Right.
You make your own choices.
Yes. And that's what we're letting him do. You know, it's going to be his choice. And it was kind of funny because where he goes to high school, they have a program called Anthus Career Center where they actually offer insights into different college careers and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And they actually had a program for criminal justice there. And so I was
hoping criminal justice also can lead into a law degree, lawyers.
Right. Or even FBI, that kind of thing, if you want to go up into those kind of things. And so I wanted him to kind of take that for, you know, half a year of his senior year so that he could decide if he really truly wanted to do that, because that's what he's thinking of going for, criminal justice. And it was kind of funny because, you know, I didn't expect this, but he decided he didn't want to do that because he didn't want to miss out on his senior year of being at school all day. So he's not doing that. So, but, you know, well, you know, you let him kind of, it's his life, and it's like, if that's what you want to do, that's what we'll do. But I thought that was kind of funny because that's my 17-year-old. But anyway, we were talking earlier. I was talking about the feminists and the whole reason they don't like Rick Santorum, you know, because they were hurt by these women voting. And it can't be because of the equal rights, because we pretty much do have our equal rights. You or I can walk into anywhere and apply for a job. And
exactly.
We don't have to stay home and be a mother, but they look down on us if you choose to do that. They did that to Karen Santorum, who is a lawyer and a NICU, a pediatric ICU nurse, yes. And she chose to stay home, and she was given flack for that. They want all women to be abrasive and have this same philosophy that we don't need men and we don't need our families, and we want to kill our little babies if we want to do that. That should be our choice. And that's the bottom line when it comes to Rick Santorum, is that he doesn't believe in killing those little babies.
But, you know, the thing is, this is the worst part, too, and I heard about this today. There's, like, a city in Pennsylvania. They're celebrating the, like, whatever anniversary it is of the Bible, of the inception of the Bible. And atheists are saying, they're taking them to court over it. You can't celebrate something without establishing a religion. So,
well, that's baloney.
Well, they're saying if you're not celebrating the birth of the Quran, the birth of atheism.
No, that's baloney.
Exactly. Well, it comes down to free will versus God's will. Those who think they have the will to make their own choices without any kind of repercussions for those choices in the end, like in the afterlife, when we are in God's hands totally. Right now, we're in our own hands and we're in God's hands. We make our choices, but God's leading us.
Right.
And we either see the signs or we don't. And it comes down to either, you know, they have this group and they make rational arguments because they start saying, well, there has to be reason behind everything. And the spiritual and religious realm is there doesn't have to be evidence. We just know.
Well, there is evidence.
And we believe. And there is. Well, yeah, the trees grow. The flowers bloom. That to us is evidence.
The human brain.
Existence.
The human brain, they've been mapping it. And all the cross intersections, and they equate it to the grid in a large city. It's what goes on inside of your brain.
Uh-huh.
Okay? That doesn't just happen. That
happen. And our conscience
that was planned.
Our conscience alone that tells us what's right and wrong is God to me. God is right there stopping me from doing wrong by my conscience. By, you know, and that's part of our brain.
Yeah.
But these people say there's a scientific explanation for it, not God has anything behind it. That means that it's their free will. Whoever makes a conscientious choice, it's not anything behind it. It's just because they're smart and they know better and they do this stuff of their own accord because there's reason behind doing it.
Well, and a lot of it has to do with what you're taught as you're growing up, too. You know, like you and I were taught to respect your elders.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I would never go down the highway and give somebody the finger or yell curse words out the window. Because
exactly.
You know, I just wouldn't do that. And I don't care what they're doing on the side of the road. If, you know, here's the thing. We're out there waving signs for Rick Santorum 3 hours on the side of the road.
Uh-huh.
They're Ron Paul supporters. They're not standing there. Mitt Romney supporters, they're not standing there. They're not taking the time to endorse their candidate, you know. So just leave me be. You don't like my candidate. You can give me a thumbs down. That's okay. I don't mind that. That's not a big deal. But don't be cursing at me and screaming at me out the window of your car or saying bad things about my candidate because, you know, that's just common courtesy. Courtesy goes along with common sense, and we don't have that anymore. We don't have that like we used to in this country.
Well, we have it. It's just not prevalent in society anymore. Common sense, and that's why when Palin says it, you know, a common sense conservative is someone who puts 2 and 2 together to equal 4, not 22.
Yeah.
And you know, the logical. The leftist logical thinking is it's 22, and we can show you how to make it 22.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But then they double-talk themselves.
They have double standards. Like, well, yeah, it's kind of like this Trayvon Martin thing. They waited a month to see if they wanted the ACLU to get involved because they had to reevaluate and find out, are the parents liberal? Are they conservative? We don't want to help conservatives. We want to help a liberal family. Is this guy a white man? Well, he's a white Hispanic man. You know, it's like, you have got to be kidding me. You either jump on the case right away with both feet, or you don't.
Well,
but you don't have to sit here and say this one's a better case than another case.
Right. And there's really no reason for them to be involved in this situation. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's up to the law enforcement. And as we see the facts coming out, we find out that this man probably did act in self-defense. Now, was it a tragedy? Yes. Could it have been handled differently? Maybe. Probably.
Yeah.
But
the thing is, it all comes
to
down
to that gun. He had a permit to carry the gun. He didn't pull the gun on the kid. The kid actually attacked him first. And, you know, just because he's carrying a gun doesn't make him bad. So.
See, the thing is, they have to find out if he acted rationally or with reason, too. And the thing is, if I were being followed and I'd want to confront the guy and I know that he was following me, I wouldn't necessarily just jump on him, but I would probably confront him and say, hey, stop following me. And it sounds like this kid did it the opposite way. He just said, you know, what do you want? And attacked him because he was being followed.
And my kids,
but who
if they're
knows?
Being followed at night, it's like, go to the safest place.
Mm-hmm.
You don't confront people at night. That's common sense. You know, if you think somebody's following you after dark,
and the kid didn't even live in Florida. You know that, right?
The kid did not live
in Florida. He was visiting his dad down there because he was suspended for school for having marijuana.
I know. But I'm waiting for all the facts to come out because I don't want to blame the kid. Because I don't want to blame the kid.
Oh, no, I'm not blaming the kid. I'm saying it was self-defense.
Yeah.
I'm saying there are self-defense evidence. There is self-defense evidence there. But at the same time, I think that there is a question of this guy should not have been following him after he was told not to, especially.
Well, we haven't got all the whole story on that either. Because one of the stories I saw showed that he had quit following him because he had lost him. And he was going back to his car.
But see, the thing you got to the thing you also got to look at in the police report to discover whether it was self-defense or not is Zimmerman was beat up pretty good.
Yeah.
He had his head bashed in. He had blood all over him. It was, somehow, some way, he ended up getting those marks, and I doubt they were self-inflicted.
Now, what the kid decked him first and then started pounding his head on the pavement. Before and the screams that you hear are Zimmerman screaming for help, which was confirmed by a witness.
Right.
Now,
the witness
was
came
there,
and this witness even said they saw that the kid was on top of him.
Yes. But I think both parties could act differently. My kids, if somebody's following my kids, I want them to go to the nearest safe place. I don't want them confronting somebody who's following them. I mean, again, we're talking common sense issues. You know, I had people, I made a comment about how you shouldn't be racial baiting and causing hate and racial tension.
Right, exactly.
And I got jumped on, and they started calling me names and talking about my kid. I said, well, my kid is 17, but you know what? I don't let him wander the streets at night. 9 o'clock,
right.
I want him in my house because he's
right,
big.
Exactly. There's a curfew in your house.
There doesn't have to be a curfew
in the city, but there's a curfew in your house. That's where the difference between it takes a village and it takes a city.
Right.
I think of the movie Footloose, you know. Footloose, you've seen that, I'm sure.
Yes.
About, you know, where they made laws for the city, Beaumont, that said all kids have to be in at a certain time. There's no dancing allowed. There's no singing allowed. There's no, you know, loud music. Any of that kind of stuff. But that should have been enforced not in the city, but in the house. That's the difference between it takes a family and it takes a village.
Right.
Because the village had no business interfering in the family.
But, and our reason for telling him this is my son is 6'3". He weighs about 225, so he's a big kid. Okay. And I don't want somebody mistaking him for a troublemaker out on the street. My kid wears a hoodie, okay?
Right.
It's not the hoodie. Both of my kids wear hoodies. She's 21. She still wears a hoodie. You know, it's not the hoodie, but it's about
responsibility. My kids have hoodie footies.
Yeah. And it's like, we don't let him wander around the streets tonight. And even if his friends come over, it's like, we don't want you out of the yard. If you're outside after this certain time, you stay in the yard, because there are people out there that might mistake you for being up to mischief. And, and it, you know, it's just common sense. And it's because we care about him that we tell him this, you know.
Right,
that,
and that's what they realize.
Running around all night long, and we don't have any idea where he is.
And I'll bet you parents down there are not saying, hey, you shouldn't be walking the streets at night. They're saying, if a white man comes after you, you run fast, you know, or something like that. They're not saying anything to, you know, it just comes down to this idiocy of how people should tell their children to fear the other race rather than use their common sense and just not go out at night like that.
Well, yeah, and it don't matter what race it is. If somebody's following my kid, I want him to go to the safest place. I don't want him confronting the person that's following him.
Right, exactly.
You know, no,
definitely.
Don't confront somebody. If you think somebody's following you, you go to the nearest safe place.
Right.
Whether that's the gas station or somebody's house or, you know, you go there, because don't be confronting people, because you don't
exactly.
know who's out there or what they're about. So, and again, that's...
It could be a neighbor. It could be a friend's house, just to go
right.
there and call you and say, hey, I was being followed.
Right.
You know?
Right. And again, I don't, you know, I may be overprotective, but that's the way I am with my kids.
Well, yeah, that's how I am too. But definitely, absolutely.
You know,
my children, I made them stay in the yard. You know, we have a fence around our backyard where the dogs hang out
uh-huh.
and stuff. And I made sure that the kids know they're not allowed to go outside that fence. We have an alley, a pretty busy alley right outside our backyard. So I don't want
yeah.
them going out there. And I've been teaching them that ever since they were 3. And now they're 7 and 8, or I mean 8 and 9. Wow, 7 and 8. I wish they were still 7 and 8. Now
yeah.
they're 8 and 9, and they know it. They just instinctively know, hey, Mom, can I play in the backyard? Yeah, I don't need to say don't go outside the fence anymore. They know that.
Right. And we don't have a fence, but we're kind of in the suburbs, and we live on a curb street, so all the houses, the backyards back up together, so there's no roads running behind the houses. And so when the grandkids are over, or my, you know, I don't tell my 17-year-old this anymore, but when the grandkids come over, it's like, stay in the backyard. I don't want you out by the street where somebody could drive by and pick you up. You know, it
right.
hasn't happened yet in our neighborhood, but I don't want it to be my grandkid, you know. And I tell them, just stay in the backyard, you know, so we can look out the windows. We have windows all across the back of our house, and we can see you, and I want to be able to see you when I look out the window, and I want them away from the street, you know. But, you know, again, to me, that's common sense. And, yeah, you still see kids running around these neighborhoods by themselves, little kids. Actually, they come in our yard from the neighbors that I don't even know on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my granddaughter is here part of the time, and they lived with us for a few years. But, no, these kids just all come and play in our backyard, and I've never met any of their parents. And some of them are probably as young as 5 or 6, and it's like, I don't know. Not me, not my kids, but so it's just kind of interesting, you know, some differences in the philosophy of raising your children and what you expect of them and who's responsible for what.
Right.
You know, in this day and age, anybody can be armed at any point in time. There's gangs running around out there. You know, you just, it's common sense. You
yeah.
need to protect your children. I don't care if they are 17, you know.
Yeah, and have you heard about this documentary Bully coming out?
No, I have not.
Well, they've got this documentary. In fact, one of the kids is from here in Sioux City that they do a documentary on
uh-huh.
who gets bullied, I mean, pretty badly. And right now it's rated R. And they're saying they want to change the rating on it because every kid should be able to see this. And, you know, I really thought about it. And I thought to myself, no, I really don't think I want my kids to see this because they could take the wrong lesson from it. They could take the side of the bully.
Yeah.
and see, you know, how to bully. They could literally look at it and view it as a reason to get up in someone's face who isn't like them or something, you know.
And
I guess this kid had glasses, and he, you know, I don't know. It just ended up that they moved to Oklahoma City from Sioux City here. And they're in a better school now. And, I mean, even the principal, though, she viewed the tape, and you see these kids punching this kid, calling him names, using the F word, all kinds of stuff. And they go to the principal, they show it to the principal, and the principal says, hey, I've been on that bus before, and these kids are golden. And the thing is, she's not letting the evidence speak for itself. And I see at the same time, you know, I see a real reason to some extent for children to know what not to do or how to intervene correctly in something like that. But, you know, I actually got out my email and I wrote to Mike Huckabee because he's the one who publicized it this past week. And I said to myself, I'm going to do this because the thing is with the documentary, it takes the hand of putting faith in men, putting faith in people to, you know, break up this kind of stuff. And I myself was bullied as a kid. I consider being called an N lover, and when I was developing, getting titty twisters by the bratty boys. And when I gained weight, being called names, I considered that bullying too. And the thing is, we each have a mentality to survive. And if we keep trying to get other kids out there to intervene and take care of it for them, then they're never going to survive. They'll either be the eternal victim that the government wants everyone to be, enabled and entitled, or they're going to survive on their own and they'll be stronger for it. And that's what I realized happened to me, because I'll tell you, by high school, everyone loved me. Everyone knew my name. I was in cheerleading for 4 years. I became very popular, and I did not let bullying go on. If I saw it, I literally got between it and said, hey, knock it off. You get to class. You know, it's like it wasn't something that – I feel like I myself then robbed that kid, but I also I ended up giving him a little bit of strength by telling him, though, you are not what those people say. Whatever they were saying to you, it's not true. Don't believe it.
Right.
Believe in yourself. Believe your own power. And you know what? If they ever do it again, just look them in the eye and tell them to shut up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here's the hypocrisy. Look at how the liberal media and the liberal left talk to Christians and people, and the things they say, they're bullies.
Yeah.
They are bullies.
Oh,
they are setting
the government
for these children.
President Obama is the biggest bully of them all. The bully pulpit is not to sit here and try talking down to American citizens, which is what he uses it for.
Right.
I saw this one thing about the health care law when it was being passed, when they were at an Arlen Specter meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman got up and said, hey, listen, I'm not what the government is saying I am because I'm conservative, but I want you to go back and you tell them to shut their mouths. And I was like, yes, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah,
I'm not a racist. I'm not a warmonger. I am an American citizen who just wants my own rights left alone.
Right. And this senator from Pennsylvania saying, you know, we are calling the Republicans men with breasts. That's bullying. That's name calling. It's what we're trying to teach our children not to do.
I wish we could.
They're doing it every day. Yeah.
I wish we conservatives or the Tea Party or someone could file a lawsuit against the DNC for hate speech.
Yeah.
Hate crimes or something, just to get that out in the open.
Yeah.
Just to let them know we're not going to take it anymore.
You're right. And I think we're seeing more of that backlash now because this birth control war on women thing didn't work. They planned it out. Yes, it didn't work like they wanted it to.
Yeah.
I think that.
Well, did you hear? You hear about the guy who still he stuck with Rush Limbaugh, and now he gets calls from Media Matters at his office, and all the women are called women haters in his business,
correct.
And everybody's getting all these terrorizing
phones. And this is not bullying.
Exactly.
This is not intimidation and bullying. And yet they want to make us go watch a film, and they want to make bullying such a big deal, and yet they're the ones promoting that, you know, to the extent they are. And with the media and with the shows that they put out, you know, that influence kids. We've always had bullying. You said you were bullied. It's always been there to some extent.
Right.
But how people react to it, and in this day and age with the social media, it's obviously...
And it was, you know what, I'll tell you, the biggest thing I was ever called, the biggest name I was ever called is Little Miss Goody Two Shoes. Because guess what? I didn't follow the crowd. I didn't smoke dope. I didn't go drinking and get drunk with them. I didn't smoke out on the bully. We called it the bully. It was a boulevard.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do those things in high school or in grade school or in, you know, middle school. I didn't do those things. So my biggest thing was, oh, there's Little Miss Goody Two Shoes. I'm like thinking I got a brand new name, you know. It's not silly anymore. It's Little Miss Goody Two Shoes.
Yeah.
And I was also known as teacher's pet because the teacher, you know, I got A's. I did my work. I handed it in on time. A lot of kids purposely wouldn't hand it in on time just to, you know, create a curve of some sort. And it was like, you know, I don't know. It just really came out that I ended up being, I was a different person. I had my individuality. I did not follow a crowd. And I was known for it. And I was picked on for it. And that's just where it came from.
Yeah. And, you know, and some kids, it doesn't affect. Like my son. Okay, my son, he's always been his own individual self. And back when he was, like, in the third grade, he wanted his hair to grow long. He didn't want to cut it. I said, if you don't care, but if you're not going to react when they call you a girl, because they're going to call you a girl because he's cute, he's pretty.
You're right.
He's got big brown eyes, gorgeous. But I said, if you're not going to get upset when they call you a girl, I don't have a problem with it. It's just hair. So he did. He's the only kid, of course, in elementary school who's got shoulder-length hair because, you know, all the other parents are buzz-cutting their kids' hair.
Uh-huh.
He wore it that way up and through, I think, eighth grade. You know, he had hair down to his shoulders because that's what he wanted. And but he didn't care. He got called a girl.
Well, heck, even kids with mullets.
So, you know, we go in, oh, your daughters. I said, well, this one's a boy, but, you know. But it didn't bother him, you know. And sometimes we just have to teach our kids to have a little thicker skin, you know. It's
right.
Not all
exactly.
About being
and that's
the
what
most
I'm saying.
Popular person in school.
This,
it's not about
this,
having...
this documentary that they're coming out with. To me, it's going to create more of an entitlement and enable kids not to grow that thicker skin.
Right. Well,
you
and
know,
that's,
to
that's
some
what
extent.
Happened. This is a generation, we have to remember, this is a generation where everybody had to have trophies because you couldn't have winners and losers. You remember that?
Yeah.
There was a whole generation where, you know, you had to praise them no matter what they did.
Right.
And, you know, and that has consequences because life isn't like that.
Well, that's kind of even like
and,
No Child Left Behind. That's why it was such a bad law.
Yes. Yes. And so... you know, we can't protect them in that way. We just need to teach them about their individuality and that it's okay to be different. It's okay to be you. And no matter what they do, that you're going to love them regardless, you know. And I think sometimes they pick on my son because he's big. It just rolls off, but he doesn't care. They call him names. You know, when he said one kid tried to start a fight with him, he just looked at him.
Yeah.
What is your problem? You know. So I think a lot of that can be taken care of just at home, you know, with your kids. But, you know, some of these kids that grew up and their parents, all they did was praise them for everything. That doesn't teach you how to survive in life.
because it's not always about praise, because you're not going to get praised for everything you do in life. There's unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So
yeah.
You have to wonder, because this is about the time frame when those kids would be, you know, you have to wonder if that doesn't have something to do with it. But, you know, you need to teach them young.
And see, my son, his first couple years, because at first he was going to school in a public school when he was staying with his dad down in Omaha. And now when he came to Catholic school, he started acting like a little bully in second grade. And now he's in fourth grade, and he fits right in with the crowd. And he's been basically nipped in the bud about that stuff.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he came in just basically, he was trying to, as the bigger kid, but the younger kid, because he's a little bit taller than everyone in this class and everything, but he's the youngest. And he kind of had that advantage to try creating a bully type atmosphere around him. And I had to let him know, you know, that's not what being bigger is about. And nobody was calling him names for being bigger or anything like that. They weren't calling him Gigantua or whatever.
Sasquatch.
They were not
Sasquatch
or anything. But he was like picking on the littler kids.
Uh-huh.
And I got really upset with that. And it turned around really fast, though. And he grew out of it. And it's something that they do need to grow themselves from, though.
Right.
It's not something that, you know, anybody can, it needs, you need a family, a parent, at least one parent or two, my husband's a big help with him, but it takes the parents doing right by the child more than anything, thinking of the child and putting the child first, and, you know, helping them mold their own future, but at the same time, you know, like, I'll tell you, when I was being bullied as a little kid, I'm talking 8 years old to about 12, I was constantly bullied. And I had the right friends around me. They did not intervene in it, but they didn't chime in with the bullies either. And when everything was said and done, you know, they just helped me up, picked me up, dusted me off, gave me encouragement, and told me, you know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And basically we're still friends today. It's not like I just called them the right friends, because they didn't risk their own, you know, getting involved and everything like that. And it came out just perfectly to me. It's like I see how God led me on that path to grow that strength and that thicker skin and grow through it. And that's how I even see our economy. Our economy has to fall down in order for it to be risen back up. And every time you bail out something, it's not letting that fall down happen. There's no impact.
Right.
You're saving it from having that impact, and that impact is necessary.
Well, true, especially if you're going to go with true capitalism, which we haven't been in quite some time. And it's not going to turn around overnight. But with this coming election, we do have a chance to make a difference and get people in there that are not about the money and the corruption, and actually start thinking about we the people and getting people back to work. I was saying earlier, you know, the Republicans actually are about trying to provide opportunities for people to raise themselves out of poverty and to break the cycle of the dependence on the government and not being racist in that. Whereas, you know, it's promoted all across that we're bigots and we're racist and that type of thing. So with our beliefs, but and interesting enough, but yeah, and I was telling about the different types of feminism, Billy, and, you know, there's the one that are just total men haters, and there's the lesbian fraction of the feminist movement, and the Marxism is what they are here in the United States. It's a Marxism feminist theory that the women are oppressed by capitalism as workers, class, primary, then gender as a social cleavage, and that a social revolution will liberate women. And, you know, I just don't feel, I feel we're past that point. We're past that point that we need these groups out there pushing agendas and issues, because the agendas and issues they're pushing are all in favor of, you know, destroying the sovereignty of our nation. They're being used. They don't know it. Some of them probably do know it. Some of them know it. Some of them don't. And it's the same thing with racism. It's being used as a mechanism to further push the agenda of class warfare, racial warfare, use the uprisings, you know, create chaos in order to bring about the change that they want to in America. So that was kind of some of the stuff I talked about before you came on the air. Let me go ahead and play one more song here, and we'll talk a little bit about Rick Santorum. And if anybody wants to call in and have a say about that, we encourage you to do that. Wonder if some people, if you don't know Rick's plan, he has a Made in America plan to bring manufacturing back to America so that we can actually have products that are made in America by giving 0% manufacturing tax to manufacturing businesses that do bring their businesses back or that are operating here in America, to give them the even playing field with China and Taiwan and Pakistan and India and all these places that things are being made now instead of in America. For those people, yeah. You know, because people say he doesn't talk about these things, but, you know, he talks about them in almost every speech.
He talks about them all the time.
I know, and it's a wonderful plan. And we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world for corporations, and he's going to drop it to 17.5% for those other corporations that would be here regardless. You know, some people think that's picking winners and losers, but not you know, manufacturing is what we've lost overseas because of the competition. We haven't lost our restaurants and those things that we still are unique to us here in America. So, and eventually, you know, we talked to him on Blog Talk Radio, and he's not averse to a fair tax, but a fair tax would require constitutional amendments, so that's not something you could do right away. So he's got some really good ideas to jumpstart the economy and get some jobs growing here in America, which is one of the things I like about him. But I don't know about this health care thing, you know, if that's even going to be an issue come election time, but RomneyCare was the basis of Obamacare, and so that that is going to take away a big issue from the Republican Party if Romney is indeed our nominee going into the fall. And also, Rick Santorum is very strong on the foreign policy because he was involved on the Senate Arms Committee. So he is aware of the situation with Syria and Iran and all these foreign countries where we have some really dangerous situations going on. So if we're looking for the candidate with the overall package of economic growth, conservative issues for those of us who are social conservatives, abortion is the only thing that he will push from the Oval Office, and he won't be able to make laws regarding that, but he will work fervently with Congress on that. Which is something.
So, what
I know
do you think
about?
What do you think about this open mic thing that happened with Obama?
Nothing surprises me anymore. He wants to give them our missile defense. He wants to give it to them. This is just so ridiculous. I do not know.
He wants to give up our. Yeah, he wants us to give up our defense system.
Yeah.
And it's.
Yeah. Because he's living under the philosophy of Marxism and communism, where it says, well, if you be friends with all these people, they won't be your enemy. Then we'll have just all love and peace. Either that or he's a Muslim. Okay, you know, one or the other. And if he's a Muslim, then he's looking.
God help us all.
Then we really got a problem. But, you know, what do you think of Hillary Clinton going behind Congress's back and sending aid over to Egypt and the Muslim
I know.
Brothers. What is with that? What is wrong with our Congress? What is wrong with our leaders that are supposed to be checking this man? You know, this is just not
and
anything.
And she has the audacity to say, oh, well, they told me they'll keep peace with Israel.
No,
but
bull.
At the same time, they're sitting here plotting against Israel.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that.
And they're shooting bombs into Israel from the Gaza Strip.
Yeah. But you don't see that on TV. You only see when Israel retaliates.
Right. Because she thinks Al Jazeera is a great objective outlet for news.
Hillary Clinton?
Yeah.
Thinks that? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she said that on Congress floor, that the best news you'll ever get is at Al Jazeera, because they're the most objective. But they won't let any Christians on the program, because they can't even get through the front door. They have a war against Christianity.
Yeah, that's really, 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 really scary. I think we got Thomas back here. Hey, Thomas, is that you?
Nope, it's not me. It is me.
Oh, well, you had to say that in a high voice like that.
Oh, okay.
But you got to say that.
You guys got to talking earlier. I just had to sit back and listen.
You know, Billy and I can always talk.
Well,
yeah, we never stop talking unless you're talking.
Well,
yeah,
I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
Oh, really? We're gals, though.
Well,
guys, you know, no, we're men with breasts. Okay, go.
Men with breasts. Okay. All right, RuPaul.
That's
what
the Pennsylvania Senator. I'm
men with breasts and ovaries and a womb.
Okay. Okay, Thomas, what's your question?
So, like, when are you guys going to start coming back to my show again? I, like, be missing you guys, and I'll be sending Facebook messages and stuff, but you guys, like, be really busy.
I do listen to your show. I do not always log into chat, though.
Oh.
When you remind me, Thomas, I get there if I'm on the internet at the time. I did Philly show Friday because I was at a party, retirement party for our business office manager, and so I wasn't able to join Billy on Friday. But yeah, if I'm on, I tune in.
I always tune you in when I'm doing housework usually, and my husband loves the music you play.
Oh, that's cool. I'm glad I bring good music.
You do.
Now, see, I learned from your show, Thomas, about the 80% of women changing their mind, you know, when they have those ultrasounds done before an abortion procedure. Right. I even brought that up tonight, so because I had heard that on one of your guests on your show was talking about that, which is why they don't want them to have them.
Right. Exactly. My guest this Friday on Pro Life Fridays is going to be Pastor C.L. Bryant of the Runaway Slave movie. And then next, the 12th or the 13th of the 12th of April, we're interviewing the creator of the Mayafa 21 video, Mark Crutcher of Life Dynamics.
Cool.
Have you guys seen them? Have you guys heard about that video?
No, I haven't.
If you Google Mayafa 21 and, you know, just watch little clips of it, it'll blow you away. It's talking about the black genocide, the abortion in the black community and stuff like that. And here's
Margaret Sanger?
Yes. Talks about Margaret Sanger and her plan of bringing black genocide to the black community through abortion. I mean, it'll make you sick to your stomach what has been done. And it's been, you know, it's something that's been well hidden by the liberals because that's what they campaign on. But anyway, so.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and like I said, just keep reminding me when I'm on because sometimes I just don't. I'm doing so much politicking on my Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
I'm part of the Twitter team for Rick Santorum. So.
Oh, that's cool.
I spend a lot of time tweeting and checking articles and that kind of stuff. So, if I'm online, Mondays and Tuesdays I get my grandbaby, so about 5 o'clock. So.
Aww.
Kind of ties me up for a few hours with them, but it was fun. So yesterday I actually had my little nephew, who's just about a year and 3 months, and my granddaughter, who turned a year old, and I had one on each leg, and they were just eating cereal. So that was kind of fun, kind of interesting, but. But yeah, if you see that I'm on, sometimes my Facebook is on and I'm not online. But if I'm on, I do listen to your show because I do enjoy listening to your guests and I do learn stuff from them. So it's always good to hear that.
Since you guys are campaigning for Rick Santorum, y'all should help me secure an interview with him.
Oh well, I don't know. I don't have that much pull.
What were you saying?
Interview with Rick Santorum.
An interview with him? Well, I could talk to Michael B. He could get a hold of him.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, so, I'll talk to Michael B. and let him know.
I greatly would appreciate that. Well, ladies, I have to call a friend because this is our Tuesday night prayer night. So we're going to pray and talk about the kingdom of God. So
awesome. Say a prayer that Americans will open their hearts to the truth.
Most definitely, most definitely.
Yeah.
Peace,
absolutely.
You guys know I love you, support you, big hugs, give yourself big old hugs for me. And
we love
give
you.
Your husband slaps on the back for me and tell him I said what's up.
Well, thanks for stopping in, Thomas, and you have a good night.
I will. Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I was I was in Illinois last week, as you know, Billy. It was kind of busy, hectic there. We were counting the results as they were coming in. I just haven't really had time to stop and think.
I agree. I know how that goes. We have a meeting on the 3rd with the Central Committee here. We're going to be doing politicking for Steve King.
Okay.
So
he's like one of the congressmen running in your area.
Yeah, he's like the only Republican running. Otherwise, you know, they'd probably want to get him out of office.
Oh.
But they don't.
Yeah. Well, we have going on, we have Richard Murdoch running against Richard Lugar here in Indiana. It's the first time there's a Republican running against him. So it could be interesting, you know, whether people are fearful that we'll lose that Senate seat if we don't put Lugar in, or we can get Murdoch elected. So,
yeah.
Interesting stuff going on in Indiana for the first time. We're actually going to have a choice, you know, because people talk about Lugar, but it's like our only other choice was to vote Democrat because he's never been challenged before in a primary. So it should be very, very interesting how that works out, especially as it was ruled that he can't actually vote in his home district because he doesn't live there.
Really?
He hasn't lived there. He hasn't lived in Indiana in I don't know how many years, but he kept his driver's license for a home that he sold, and he renews. I don't know how he renews it online or something, but because the Indiana Attorney General had said it was okay for him not to live here. But that's not constitutional.
It's okay for him not to live. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, because he could be closer to his job in Washington. But, you know, the Constitution says that a senator has to live in the state. So, you know, I don't see how they actually can justify that. You know, I can see having a second home, but he doesn't maintain a second home or anything here. He's got a family home here that his sons own, but he doesn't have a residence here in Indiana. So, you know, that alone should disqualify him, but they still let him be on the ballot. That was challenged, but because the Indiana Attorney General said it was okay, he's still going to be on the ballot. So could be interesting. We'll kind of see how that plays out.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm going to mute myself for a second. I got to run my coffee grinder.
Okay, that's fine. But it kind of goes down again to getting the corruption out of Washington, you know, setting the term limits ourselves that these congressmen won't set on themselves because they're all about money and the corruption of the Washington establishment. And they're so out of touch with the everyday American like you or I who we are suffering. You know, we're a lot of people struggling just to maintain even. And they're just so out of touch with that. And so it would be good if we can get him out and get a more conservative person in. But we also have to remember our Senate. We want to try to take the Senate this year with our conservative, at least with Republicans, if not conservatives. But I'm not willing to settle this time. I want to actually make a change and make a difference. And that comes by putting in more conservatives. You know, it's not going to change overnight, but at least if you can get the money and the corruption and the power hold that's currently involved in politics, you make a start. And it won't be easy because you have people like George Soros, who's invested millions, billions, actually $8 billion in elections and trying to influence the politics in America and social causes in America, that it's never going to be easy. And this is why I don't think Mitt Romney can win, because if you watch in the news and the media, they softball him the questions, and he never has to answer anything. Well, they're not going to do that with Obama. They do that with him now because they want him as the nominee, whereas Rick has already taken those hardball questions. They throw them at him again and again. They try to distort his views. Romney has one of his people goes around to all of Rick's events when he's giving a speech and just tries to catch him up and feeds this stuff into the ear of the reporters. The actual clip where Rick got mad and lost his cool a little bit, it was a question fed to the reporter by a Romney guy. Now, people, you want to talk about Washington Insider. Even though Mitt Romney hasn't been in Washington technically, he knows all the money people in Washington. He's probably friends with those money people in Washington because he's a money guy. He's not an average guy on the street. He's not like Rick Santorum, who coached Little League for 3 years for his son. A Little League coach, okay? That's you and me, the man who homeschools his children. You know, a man who understands what the average person is going through on the street and wants to bring back jobs to this country. A man who comes from good, hard-working background, you know, in the coal mines of Pennsylvania. An average guy like you or I, except for he's got the political experience that it will take to actually jump into the position that Barack Obama is vacating, because Barack Obama has made a mess with his regulations and his foreign policy and just about everything he's done with his bailing out, giving money to alternative energy. Now, I have nothing wrong with alternative energy, but it needs to be developed by the private sector, not give our money, you know, $500 million gone to Solyndra for kickbacks to somebody in the Obama administration because he thinks that we need solar energy. Now, that's not the way the government's supposed to work. The government has no business in that. You know, if they want to give a tax break because somebody's going to try to make solar energy, give them a tax break, but don't be giving them money. Don't be giving them our money. And we have to produce oil. Oil is not just for running our cars. There's a lot of petroleum products out there that are not involved with running your car down the street. You know, chapstick, rubber gloves, condoms, you know, things that prevent diseases, rubber gloves that we use, you know, in the medical field. We have to have our gloves on, you know, when we're doing patient care. There's just so many things that are actually they use oil to make. And this is going to increase the cost of everything. And what is the increase of cost? Who's that going to affect? That isn't going to affect Obama. You know, that isn't going to affect these people in Washington. That's going to affect you and I, the middle class, and the poorer people in this country when we go to the store and try to buy products, because that's going to be added in to the cost of everything. This is why we say drill. Drill here, drill now. It's not only that, it's also national security. We got our hands in the fate of these countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia and you know, they can hold it over our heads, whereas if you are drilling in this country and tapping our own resources at the same time, you know, if there's people out there that want to develop alternative energy, they can do that. But we don't have enough wind power to power things here in the United States. And we're a long way from having that electric battery-run car that's actually efficient. But the private sector needs to be developing those things, not the government that has just basically wasted over $1 trillion in alternative energy companies that have failed, just failed outright because they didn't have to work for what they had. So they have no skin in the game, as they say. Excuse me, Billy.
That's okay.
No, actually, it just, you know, it sounds pretty much the way I think.
I know. I was telling somebody that the other day. It's like you and I didn't even know each other, you know, before this election season. It's like we're sisters or something. It's like we think, we just think so much alike. This is a, it's amazing to know there's somebody out there that's kind of on the same page as I am.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my husband thinks I'm kind of unique, but, you know, hey, not as unique as he thought, I guess. But yeah, so this is an important election for more reasons than one, and we need to make sure we're fielding a good candidate. This is our chance, especially for the social conservatives. This is our chance. And don't let them tell you Rick can't win. 1980 elections going up against Carter. President Reagan, they said he was too conservative. He was too conservative to beat Carter, and he won in a landslide. And
yeah.
I don't think you can be too conservative and lose, because like you said, Billy, it will bring out the right-wing base, and we need our base, because I can guarantee you, I will guarantee you the moderates and the independents that are involved in business will vote for a conservative over Obama. And they are going to the polls, okay? And the ones that won't go are those who think it will be business as usual if we get Mitt Romney, and they don't understand where our president is on the issue. They don't know all of the things that we talk about here with the money going to Egypt and these backhanded door things that the media doesn't report on. So it's very, very important that we have a say. And don't let them tell you Romney hasn't got this wrapped up, because Romney doesn't necessarily have the delegates to win outright. And
No. Actually, you know me about that whole situation.
Yeah.
Here in Sioux City, like I said, we're having our, our Central Committee is having a thing for Stephen King coming up. But they're going to be talking a lot about how they want to help those people who I've been talking about who will not vote if Romney's the nominee. I mean, they are diehard, absolute. They are the ones that Santorum was talking about. He was not talking about himself. He was talking,
right.
He said the
right.
exact words I've been saying for weeks.
Right,
that
exactly.
People will stay home if Romney is the nominee. Why? And now their biggest thing is they'd rather risk 4 more years of Obama and then establish some sort of revolution rather than risk 8 years of Romney.
Yes.
Because why? They should come out and vote just because he's got the label of an R behind his name? No. They want someone who's true to the name conservatism.
Right.
They want someone who knows what he means and means what he says.
Right.
And that's not Romney.
And
Romney
that's
means
take.
What he says to certain audiences. He will say whatever will make the audience happy, not what makes what really means anything to him. None of what he says means anything to him, because
right.
he changes it from day to day. And we
exactly.
know that. That whole etch-sketch thing is not a lie.
Right. I know, unfortunately. If it was, it wouldn't have gained so much traction. But it just buys into what we've said all along. We don't trust him, because how do we really know where he stands? His wife even
we
said.
We don't, and we never really will,
argue,
actually, with him.
Yeah, and his wife said he can argue both sides of the argument. That's his wife saying that. Now, what does that tell you about a person? It's like, okay, you know, well, I know I can argue my side of the argument, and I might be able, you know, I could probably try to argue somebody else's side, but it doesn't come natural to me to just spout it out of my mouth.
And I'll tell you, the biggest, what's the word I'm thinking of? The biggest example that people use has nothing to do with his, you know, abortion stance, his flip-flopping, so to speak. It's the fact that he said, I'm running for president for Pete's sake. I can't have illegals working on my house because I'm running for president. Yeah. Now,
well, that's how that
it was
out.
Simply
yeah.
because of that that people think, okay, they get it through their head. They say, if he weren't running for president, it would be okay. And that doesn't show a high moral stance on his part.
Right.
And we are saying, we meaning the conservatives that I talk to, I am an anybody but Obama, and I will vote that way.
Yes.
But at the same time, I see where they're coming from, and I understand, and I sympathize with them. Because
yeah.
they seriously can't trust him. And they won't. They're not going to try.
Well, and I know
there's
also,
no reason to.
There were probably some people that might have voted for him at the beginning of this nomination process, but the way he has attacked Rick Santorum, he outspends him like 50 to 1 in the cities, and he puts out.
Yeah.
He doesn't call people and tell them what he's going to do to make this country better. He calls them and attacks Rick Santorum. That's how
right.
he campaigns. Now,
he never ever. His campaign has never been pro Romney itself, it's always been anti Santorum.
Right, or anti Gingrich, or, you know, who's ever
right.
leading at the time. But, you know, and ask yourself why that is. You know, I already
it's because
know
he has nothing
is.
To run on. He knows
right.
that he's the equivalent of Obama.
Right. Because if you look at his record in Massachusetts, it is not that of a conservative. And so, you know, he can't run on his record. And he's not gonna have more money than Obama, people. He's not gonna have the war chest that Obama has. It's not gonna be there. You know, he's not going to be able to make negative calls about Obama, because if he starts doing that, I can guarantee you people are going to go out and vote for Obama. So you need somebody who has a stark contrast, somebody who has a message, can stay on his message, knows what he says. That's why he's so quick when they try to distort him, and he says, I never said that. You know, and he can come right back, and he comes right back at him and tells them, this is what I mean, and you know that's what I mean, because I say it in every one of my speeches, and he does. He does. And he doesn't say the same thing in every one of his speeches, because one day I listened to 5 of his speeches, and every one was different from the other one, maybe had a few things in common that you had heard before, but he does this all without a teleprompter. He does this all without notes. It all comes from his mind and his heart, so you know that these are the things he truly believes. This is the way he truly thinks. Because how would you remember it otherwise? You know, how would you be able to just sit there and talk about these issues in a consistent manner if it wasn't just ingrained into your, not only your brain, but your heart? And
right.
That's why I trust him. That's why I trust him, you know, and I've watched Romney, and he basic questions. He got mad at Brett Barr for asking basic questions about things he should be able to answer, like Romney Care and Obamacare, because you know very well that's going to come up in the general election. You know very well that Obama's going to throw that at him. And if he can't, defend it now, how's he going to defend it then?
Well, he defends it with the 10th Amendment, and we all know the 10th Amendment is not going to save him.
No, because a lot of people don't understand the Constitution.
Right.
Or even think of it as a relevant document, you know,
right.
unfortunately, in this country. Because even the people, when you try to say that he may not be a natural-born citizen, they don't care. And, you know, that's sad. That's sad, but... That's the reality. The reality is these people don't know their Constitution, and they don't really care. So when he starts bringing up the 10th Amendment, they're not going to care. They're going to say,
exactly.
oh, well, you know, he's just blah, 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 blah. You know, it's still a mandate. He still forced birth control on the Catholics. He still did this. You know, they're now providing abortions, free abortions in Massachusetts under Romney Care. You know, so there's not going to be that difference. And how can you say you're pro-life and yet this plan that you put into place is providing free abortions? You know, that's kind of contradictory in and of itself. I was considering it the other day, because actually at this party that I was at on Friday, one of my friends, she goes, I'm going to have to unfriend you. You're driving me crazy on Facebook. Because I've told people before, I have doctor friends. Well, I work for a group of doctors. And, of course, they're all for Romney. But they're not social conservatives. They're your moderates. You know, they're your fiscal conservative Republicans. And so they're obviously for Romney, that's who he attracts, is the fiscal conservative, moderate to independent Republicans. And she says, "You're driving me crazy on this Facebook." And she goes, "I'm just so scared." She says, "I'm just so scared for our nation, you know, and I don't know what to do, you know, and we just have to win." And this is the thing. They're not voting for Romney because they like him. They're voting out of fear. They're not voting their convictions. And what we really need to get the message out to people is that you need God, you know, you're praying to God for this country. And right now, what two candidates do we have? We have Mitt Romney and we have Rick Santorum. We're halfway into the ballgame. We got a choice between two candidates. If you're out there saying prayers to God to help you and help this country, then you need to listen to him. He's already given you his answer. We have a man who started with nothing, came from 1%, and is now second in this race, and is still in this race at the halfway point. Okay?
Exactly.
God is answering your prayers, but you've got to open your heart and you've got to trust him. You've got to trust him when you go out to make your vote. And you've got to vote your convictions, not out of fear. God isn't going to help us if we don't make that effort to trust his answer. And, you know, that was something that just came to me on my way home after talking to her, because she's afraid. She's afraid. Well, she goes, "I'm going to go home and pray about it." Well, you know, we've been praying about it. And what do we have? At halfway through the race, we got a very godly man who will stand up for the rights of the Christians to speak in the square and have our voices heard. And we have a man who stands on no principles to vote for. It looks to me like God has given us an answer, and we need to trust what that answer is, and we need to put our vote where our trust is at. Otherwise, you know, God's not going to do it all for us.
Right.
So that was just kind of something that it just struck me on the way home. It's just like, you know, God is answering the prayers, and people aren't listening. They're not listening because they're afraid. But if you truly have faith, have that faith that God does answer prayers, then go with your heart and vote that conviction and not fear. So, okay, I'm off on my religious rant there for you people. But we go there every once in a while too, don't we, Billy?
So, yes, we do.
But, you know, really, truthfully, honestly, if you're praying to God for what to do, I think the answer's plain. It's right there in front of your face. You know, he's given us a choice. And it's up to the voters now to make that choice. Wisconsin is coming up next week, and Maryland. We're not on the ballot in D.C., which is also coming up next week, but we are on the ballot in Maryland. Wisconsin, I believe, is winner take all. So, you know, we need to be out there making phone calls and doing whatever we can, tweeting, whatever we can to try to get that win in Wisconsin next week. So, and then I think we have a break. So California is going to be big if you're in California. I know there's a good group working on the ground there, and we just need to work a little bit harder, get the message out. We need to get the message out in these states coming up. If you're in a state that's coming up, get out there and get the message out. Get the message out before Romney hits the airwaves, because he's going to hit the airwaves, and he's hitting them big. He outspent Rick, I think they said it was 50-1 in Chicago. You know, it's just crazy the amount of money he's spending to get the votes. Here's the interesting thing. In Illinois, it was called a blowout, and he only beat Rick by, 11-12%? And then beat him by 22% in Louisiana. And it's not even supported.
The thing was the number of delegates that were up. And this is the part that nobody sees and nobody really pays enough attention to is, Illinois is for Obama anyway.
Right.
It doesn't matter that Romney won in the Republican race there.
Right.
Because
he's not
going to
win
in
right. Because Chicago outvotes the counties, because the counties are more conservative, but Chicago is going to vote Obama.
Exactly.
There's no way there's a Republican that is probably not going to win Illinois. It hasn't happened, and I don't think it will. you know.
And see, Romney's goal has not been to take away those conservative votes from the South. That's
no.
what he should be doing if he really wanted to win this.
Oh, yeah.
He should be after those states that are going to stay Republican, because that's where the vast number of people who will not vote in the election are.
Right.
They will not vote at all, and he doesn't get it. He
no.
really doesn't.
He's
the people who don't vote for him are voting for Obama. And
he's
that's how I have to say it to people.
I know.
I have to tell people here, hey, if you don't vote for him, then you vote for Obama. And I will be voting
care.
For him if he is the nominee.
And
but they say it doesn't matter. We want yeah. someone who has a moral fiber in there, and this man doesn't.
Right. And they forget, and all these media, see, the media and the RNC is feeding into Romney's ego or whatever it is, telling him he doesn't need the conservative vote. Because they
well, no. They don't say that. They say it's an automatic vote for them. The RNC
no.
says they're automatically going to vote Republican no matter who it is. And that is where they're wrong.
Yeah.
They don't realize that those are the people who will not get out and vote at all.
So they didn't
now, they're more interested in the independents who will go out and vote, but may vote Democratic.
Oh, but they're not going to if they're businessmen or they're people that, you know.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's not going to happen. You know,
and they don't see the truth of what they're really doing as harm. They won't realize that, guess what? This brand called Republican is not as awesome as you think it is when you put someone like Romney at the forefront of it. You cannot
right.
expect conservatives to just simply welcome him into it.
Well,
I mean,
see,
that's
but,
like,
but
you
they've
know,
been telling us he's the nominee before the first vote was ever cast. You know?
Yeah.
They were telling us
that's
on Fox
just
that
going
Romney's
with the talking
be,
points.
Romney's
going
to be the nominee. Romney's going to be the nominee. Excuse me. No.
Don't
you
we
know.
Have a say?
Don't we have a say? You know? Apparently, they don't think we do. And, this delegate thing has been very interesting. I've been learning a lot about delegates and things I never really even thought of before because, you know, Indiana, we don't vote till May. We're voting May 8th. This
mm-hmm.
year we're going to have a say. I mean, I think it's great that we're going to have a say. And we're already getting our sine waves. We've got sine waves going on the weekends and different things here and trying to contact people and get the message out ahead of time. Although most likely this we will go for Rick Santorum, but you know, you don't want to take anything for granted. And so we're gonna try to get out and get the message out before Romney hits the state. But
right.
But yeah, it's
before and did you see Rick Santorum's new Obama ad? Obamaville?
Yes, I did. I like that.
I love that.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good ad. So,
I thought it turned out really well.
Yes. Yes, I did too. So, but I don't know how these play. I don't know if they're playing on any television markets. You know, I don't know because I haven't.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I heard that the one that I don't like is their Obamacare ad with Uncle Sam getting a checkup.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's not a good ad to me.
Really?
The one that Obama put out is much more powerful, and it plays to their talking points, you know, the, you know, pre-existing conditions, the 26-year-olds on mommy and daddy's plan, all that stuff. And the one with, it's like Uncle Sam getting a checkup, and he's like, sorry, Sam, but you're, you know, you're basically it's about how the nation's falling apart, but it doesn't really tell the whole message.
Yeah,
the way that it should.
Did you see
that? Look it up on YouTube when we're done.
I'll have to. Did you see the one that the doctors put out on?
No.
Where they actually pushed Grandma over the cliff.
No, I did not see that. I heard about it though.
Yeah, it
was.
Was
Grandma
out by
looking like Nancy Pelosi?
Huh?
Was Grandma looking like Nancy Pelosi?
No.
I'd really be interested in that.
No, they had her, but they had like a guy pushing the chair that had on the presidential seal on his jacket.
And she's talking, I don't know if she's talking about getting a hip replacement or something, or about her pain and everything and this and that. And all of a sudden, she actually shoves her over the cliff. But it's the doctor's group that put it out, you know. And then there's a doctor talking about what Obamacare will do. So I thought that was pretty hilarious. That was the, kind of their response to, you know, supposedly
Paul Ryan,
you know, trying to reform Medicare and pushing grandma over the cliff, which is not going to happen. If you're out there listening and you're on Medicare or Social Security, not going to happen, okay? But for the younger generation where there is no Medicare or no Social Security, there's going to be issues and it has to be addressed and it needs to be addressed. It should have been addressed 10 years ago. It should have been addressed when Bush was in office and he did try to address it and the Democrats shot it down. The Democrats shot it.
Well, because you got people like Harry Reid saying, hey, it's strong for another 20 years. It's not strong for another 20 years. It has possibly 20 more years left of life.
Right.
And then it's dead.
And then what? You know? So what are we going to wait?
We're
going to wait 19 years and then try to fix it?
We have President Obama out there talking about preventative medicine. Why don't we talk about preventative medicine again, okay? Prevent it from going bankrupt in 20 years. Don't wait about 19 and a half years before you address it.
Here's the thing. If they're going to raise the Medicare age to 72 and they're not going to let anybody over 70 have medical care, it's fixed. They don't have an issue with Medicare. And that is the Democratic plan.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, the Democrats are just, they're just after the rich paying more. That's all they're really after. They want wealthy people to pay more.
Which is a joke, because they know it's not going to happen.
Well, you never know. See, it depends on whether Obama wins again or not. I mean, remember, he said, wait, he'll be more flexible after the election.
Oh, yeah, and going to give our missile defense away and everything else.
Well, yeah, and the thing he'll do other than that is he'll eliminate DOMA. He'll do everything he promised he'll do to the special interests. You know, he'll even throw down the Keystone. But it's just, well, actually, the Keystone now, I guess they're going to have to go another 3 years before they get approval on that, because they're making them resubmit their entire application that they submitted 5 years ago. So it's just ridiculous.
Well, they started building portion of it down in Oklahoma, which didn't need presidential approval, and then he went down
exactly.
to get credit for it, which is just crazy. You know, it's just insane.
Yeah, the stuff that's happening from Oklahoma to Texas has nothing to do with the president approving anything.
Right.
It has to do with the American Corps of Engineers doing it, which is not necessarily a federal program, but it is a state program for each of the states, and that was approved through the states. But it has nothing to do with the federal level at all, interfering or intervening on any part of it.
Yes.
But the thing that scares me the most is that executive order he passed a few weeks ago, where it says that he can basically come into private business and tell them what to do. And I think that was done because he wanted to get involved in the private oil, you know, the people who are selling private oil on our lands. And he's going to come in and try regulating them more.
Yeah, because that's the only reason we have jobs going on right now is these people that went around the government and are still, you know, in the Dakotas and places like that. They're fracking for oil, and they're doing it without approval from the Obama
administration. And, you know, did you hear about the pink slime in meat?
Yeah, I was watching.
You know who BPI is? Beef Products International. Well, we have a plant here in Sioux City. It's the only one that exists anymore because of this pink slime controversy. The pink slime is not slime at all. It's actually meat. It's just been overground. It's been ground and ground and ground and ground and ground.
Well, they put
over
a chemical of some sort in it. There is a chemical in it, but I don't know what it
is. A preservative. There's a preservative in it. But it's still meat. Regardless.
Yeah.
And I just found out from someone who works for the BPI plant here, they have closed down all their other plants now. There's only one existing, that's the one here in Sioux City, and it's also, they went from having a 3-shift program down to 2 shifts So they're really eliminating jobs there, all because of all this, you know, stuff that's taken a hit on the stock market, everything because of this pink slime that is actually meat, even though it has, you know, a preservative in it.
Huh. Yeah. Well, the restaurant
and I guess
Louis
Farrakhan is the one who actually started it.
Huh. Yeah, and they used to use it in, like, McDonald's and places like that used to use it.
Right.
And they're not using it anymore, so.
Right.
I don't know. But,
well, Beef Products International has lost a lot of their business now. They're no longer, you know, like the main seller for Walmart anymore. They used to be the main seller for most of the food restaurant industry, you know, and stuff. And now they've lost lots of their clientele.
Interesting.
All because of this. It's just kind of really ridiculous to me because now I'm seeing my friends lose their jobs again over something, you know, to me, it's meat. But, and I've bought that stuff and I, you know, made spaghetti and sloppy joes and stuff with it. But it's not, the whole thing doesn't even look like they should. It's marbled in.
Uh-huh.
It's just the stuff that gets ground and ground over and over and over again. It's been ground like 50 times because they don't waste it.
Hmm. Yeah, I know. And I really didn't pay too much attention to that, but I saw it on the news today.
But it's costing our economy in many ways. It's costing a lot of our economy here in Sioux City. Like I said, they went from three shifts now to two shifts. And they have hardly any clientele anymore now.
Hmm.
It's just ridiculous.
It is kind of ridiculous. And it's part of our world. You know, you have to be really careful out there, even when you're looking on the Internet, because...
Well, the EPA, the FDA, everyone, it's always been approved by them. They know about it. They've known about it. But now it's the public outcry on it that cost them all this.
Well, yeah, they had an article about them feeding it to school kids and... that kind of stuff. So,
well, they've been doing it for 70 years at the same plant.
Uh-huh.
They've been doing it for 70 years. It's always been a part of it. Everyone's known about it in the government. They've always gotten high grades on it. It's not USDA choice or anything, but it is graded A, grade A something, whatever. But they still, now the public outcry has cost a lot of jobs.
Yeah, and that's what you got to be careful of when you're on, like, the Internet, because you'll get part of the story but not the whole story.
Exactly.
And it can be harmful. And that's the same thing that's been happening with this Trayvon Williams case in Florida, is that we're not getting all the
stories. Well, even the Rush Limbaugh thing.
Yeah.
You know, they call the media matters. It's they're a big part of this stuff. They are the ones who are trying. I mean, they're trying to destroy our economy by putting this kind of junk out there. They're telling people, oh, don't watch Fox News. They're telling people, don't buy this meat. Don't go to McDonald's because they're selling this meat. They're telling people to do it, and people are actually listening to them.
Right.
And that's the scariest part.
Well, they've been listening to the media for a lot of years, and that's where they get their news. And like I said the other day, I made a comment on one of the Trayvon Williams websites, and they called me a liar, you know, because I'm like, this is what, you know, the police report said, and this is what's going on. And this guy kept calling me a liar and telling me I needed to apologize. It's like, here's the article.
Are you kidding?
No, I am not kidding. And I finally just said, you know what, I'm not going to comment. And I posted tons of articles. And, you know, they had that poster on it that said Wanted Dead or Alive, you know, the Zimmerman poster bounty.
Right. And, you know, the Black Panthers have a $10,000 reward for anyone who turns him into
them. Well, and the pamphlet they handed out at their thing said Dead or Alive. And so, and he was calling me a liar, saying they didn't say that. So I had to post the picture for him. And, it's crazy. They're just crazy people. But anyway, and I finally just said, you know what, I'm not commenting here anymore, but it is wrong to be racial baiting, and it is wrong to stir up racial tensions over a case like this when you don't have the facts. And as we're seeing the facts coming out, and I just hope some of those people, this is what we need to start doing as conservatives. We need to go out there and we need to take these name calling and these hits and just stand by our word and post the facts. And hopefully then when the facts come out, somebody, it might just touch, just one person might see that the media is leading them around by their nose, you know, because.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like that one guy that we had call in. Remember that Mahmoud guy?
Yeah.
When he called in?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's like everybody always says, oh, how crazy you are to hear or to even have any kind of doubt in whether our president was born in our country.
Right.
Well, then don't put documents that can be altered on the internet. And don't, you know, it's like, how on earth can anybody sit here and say, you know, I am not someone who wants to be involved in saying in the birther issue,
mm-hmm.
but I'm telling you, he has not been transparent enough to create a lack of doubt.
Right.
He never has been, and they think
and
they don't
will
have
be.
To.
Yeah.
They think they don't have to, but they'll damn any conservative who isn't.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And what's sad is just not the birth certificate. It's the school records. It's everything that he won't release.
It's the signs in Kenya that say to Barack Obama's birthplace.
Yes.
You know, come on.
Yes. And why aren't those coming out? And everybody that starts to investigate it, all of a sudden they quit. You know, why? Why? What is going on? You know, it just creates too many questions as to, you know, why... And he could answer this by releasing those, but he won't release them because he can't.
Well, that's like even his Columbia law or his records from college. I mean, there's, and even his books. Have you read either of his books?
I have not, no.
Okay.
I can't say that
well,
I have.
If you have, if anyone ever has, you can read them and tell they're written in two different styles. They're not both written by the same person. You can definitely see that. One has a very well-articulated message, and it's articulated. It's a bad message, but it's well-articulated. The other is just a lot of rambling, kind of like the kind of stuff we do here.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it's smart rambling, but it's not the same person. You could tell that just reading them. And there's been rumors out there saying he didn't write both of them. In fact, they've had Bill Ayers as one of the authors of one of his books. And nobody knows the truth, but there is a definite contrast between the writing in both of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's questions. If you don't want to be questioned, then don't put that kind of junk out there for people to question.
Right. Right, and it's just a double standard. I mean, look at them with Rick Santorum. They go back and pull out every little thing they can possibly find and question him on it. And yet something as simple as your draft card registration card, you know, that doesn't have the full date on it like all the other registration cards did.
Yeah.
You know, they don't question that at all. And it really makes you wonder what's going on in the media, what's going on in America. But on the goals and the agenda, the communist agenda and goals that I talked about earlier in the program, you know, they were to infiltrate one or more of the parties, to infiltrate the judicial system, infiltrate schools. And, you know, so it's very possible that there's a lot of communist operatives or not, I shouldn't say communist operatives, that sounds like we're still in the Cold War, but people that are trying to take away the sovereignty of America by pushing the social agenda and not for the good of America, but for a ultimate goal of the one world order, one world nation or socialism, whatever their agenda is, it's not good for America. It's not in our best interest as citizens of America. And we need to really, really, like I said, trust and have faith in God and get rid of this fear, you know, get rid of the fear because God's given you a choice and you just have to make it. You know, the choice is there and it's now up to people to make the choice. So anyway, let me give a list of shows that we have on Conservative Nation Radio. I'll go over here and
Check on Friday nights. We have No Abomination with Billy Cotter that starts at 7 Central.
Yes, but I will be doing an additional show this week. I'll be doing one Wednesday because I did not do one Friday.
Oh, well, that's good because I was worried because I got home. I was like, well, Billy did a show and I wasn't there. Because I was out. I was actually out. So, okay, so you're going to do one tomorrow.
Yep.
At 7 Central.
Yep.
Which is, I have no idea what my time is.
Okay. It's 8. 8. You start.
They make us change our clocks now. I never know what time I'm on. We used to do it when I was a kid, and then they stopped doing it for a long while, and now we have to do it again. So it just is always messing me up. Okay, so Wednesday and Friday this week, No Abomination on at 7 p.m. Central's time. On Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Central, we have Red, Right, and Blue with Rick
Bulow.
Below is actually our host for that program. On Sundays, we have Soldiers of Patriotism with Michael B. Smith and Becca Lauer. And on, I don't see one for Monday. Are our young guys doing one on Monday still?
I don't know.
Okay.
They did one last night.
Okay, it's not posted on here, but usually on Monday nights we have Sons of Liberty, Liberty Sons, college kids
right.
that are doing shows for Rick Santorum on Monday nights. And I'm not real sure what time that is. So those are the shows that we put on here at Conservative Nation Radio. We ask kids to just tune in and call in if you like. We're always open for phone calls and open for discussion. We take any and
welcome
all calls.
All phone calls, whether they're controversial or they're
that's right.
Agreeable.
We like a little controversy now and then. I think it gives everybody a chance to think, you know, because if you just only hear your own opinion, you're never going to learn anything new about.
Well, yeah, we men with breasts, you know, when we sit here and talk down about liberal women, we're just.
Yes. We
you know.
We men with breasts
stupid.
Have the mother instinct. I don't know, you know.
I just find it so stupid. It's pathetic.
That comment was just ridiculous. Because a lot of us are the women that are having children, you know, that have the mother instinct, and a lot of us like to stay home with our kids, you know. I was fortunate that I could work weekends and, you know, have my kids all week long, you know. And you know, that's an okay choice, and that should be an okay choice. You know, they're all about choice, except for when it comes to making the choice they don't want you to make.
Exactly.
Yeah. They don't want you to stay at home. They don't want you to have a loving husband and for you to love your husband and cook for him when you feel like it, if you feel like it. You know, they don't want you to do those things because that's demeaning to women when, you know, no, it's not. No, it's not.
It's
you know, my
not.
Mother, my mother stayed home. My mother took care of the house and the kids. And, you know, that's a wonderful influence and a wonderful role model for kids. You
and
know,
my mom, she worked 2 and 3 jobs most of the time. And I'll tell you, I wish she would have stayed home some more. But at the same time, you know, I myself, I've worked in the workforce 22 years. I have my bachelor's in business administration. I have an associate's in IT and multimedia. But I myself do stay home now with my children. And, well, they're in school now during the day. And I can, you know, work on the house and do certain things because my husband has a good job. But the thing is, you know, I'll tell you, this is something that came to me about a year and a half ago when our economy was way down in the job market. And I did go looking for a job, and I just was trying to get extra money and I was thinking of putting myself back in the workforce. But then I saw real needy people in line trying to find a job, and I talked to my husband and I said, hey, you know what? I don't need to take a job away from someone who really does need it.
Right.
And I asked him, you know, we discussed it. We agreed that I'll just stay home then. And I can do more gardening and I can do more, you know, fixing up in the house and walking the dogs and, you know, stuff like that. Just more me time.
Right. Exactly.
Time,
it doesn't make
it.
You any less of a woman or any less of a person for
right.
doing that and having the ability to do that. And
but I remember the 80-hour weeks when I was in the workforce and managed a 7-Eleven and all the different things I have done in the past. It's not like I've never been in the workforce. I just don't feel I need to stay in it all my whole life.
Right.
And maybe when my children are grown, I'll go back into it.
Yeah, and it's to a point in America where you can get those jobs and you could get out there with your degrees and get your job and be able to work and join the workforce. And for
right.
these movements, for these women organizations and these movements to keep trying to push an agenda through that is not the agenda of all women, you know.
Oh, get that.
Yes,
this is,
you know,
so, this is funny.
Yeah.
Remember what I've told you before about the Girl Scouts?
Yes.
And how they're now... My daughter goes to Catholic school, but her friend's in Girl Scouts, and I never allowed her to join it. But her girlfriend, that she's in third grade, has come out and started asking questions in school about why is their particular school, which is a Catholic school, trying to stop women from having rights in America.
What?
And her friend asked this question. And she asked, well, where did you come up with that idea? And she said, well, they told her in Girl Scouts that that's what's happening. And it's like,
wow.
Okay, well, they're wrong. That's not what's happening.
Yeah, the thing with Girl Scouts is that it's usually up to the leader. So that, you know, I was a Girl Scout leader, and we didn't go that way here. And I didn't see that in any of my books. But, you know, a lot of it is up to whoever's leading the group at that time. And so
yeah.
I suppose you could get somebody who was very feministic in their viewpoints. But that's pretty sad. And you want to talk about indoctrinating kids. You know, that's what they're doing.
They're saying, and see, the thing is, Girl Scouts are not just for the school. The troops are not just for each individual school.
No.
So they didn't, like, alienate the fact that, hey, some of these kids go to Catholic school. But they literally just said the Catholic Church and Catholic schools don't want to give women health care.
Oh, that's
and they just
there.
Want to give men health care is how she reads it in third grade, you know. They just think that only men deserve health care.
It's not health care.
The way the exactly.
Yeah, we talked about that when you weren't here. It's not healthcare. And I actually had found the article that there was an increased risk of the triple negative breast cancers, which are more aggressive cancers in the younger women that use the birth control. So I talked about that earlier being a health issue. And it's not a health issue, you know.
Yeah.
$4 pills at Walmart, folks. $9 pills at Target. Not a health issue. It's your cup of coffee from Starbucks. Okay.
Give it up.
Give it up. You know,
sacrifice is part of living.
Sacrifice to go buy your birth control pills. You know, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Not the government's job to supply them. Not a women's health issue.
I should not have to sacrifice my hard-earned money if I were working, but
right.
I should not have to sacrifice my work money to pay for their, you know, I'm not the one that should have to sacrifice for them to go get, you know,
Yeah.
go have sex.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it doesn't offer any protection from the other diseases that are out there. So what it probably does
exactly.
is encourage people to have unprotected sex.
Well, the thing that really got me about that whole controversy is the fact that, and I see it so vividly, that she blatantly lied, okay? The school the school has even come out and said, but this isn't publicized, they do cover medical conditions that, you know, where a prescription for birth control is warranted. They cover those. If the doctor says that's the only way that this person can stop having seizures or whatever is to give them birth control pills, the school covers that. She literally on the floor of the house said, no, they don't.
Yes.
But nobody will ever go after her for that lie. You know why? Because she didn't lie to the committee. She lied to Nancy Pelosi. She lied to
the Democrats. Well, and Nancy Pelosi knew she was lying, you know.
Yeah,
Nancy Pelosi, she's all about, they're all about pushing their socialistic agenda and making problems where there aren't problems. And
right.
They just didn't expect to see this kind of resistance, you know.
I
think they thought
didn't.
They had convinced America you know, they thought that all America thought like they think.
They thought all of us women would bend.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did.
And you know, I'm sorry, but some of us have some common sense. And some of us have always been against killing the babies, even when we were teenagers. And that's always been an issue with me. And I'm never going to agree to it, no matter what you do. I'm never going to say it's right. And I'm never going to join your side on that issue. I'm just not going to go there. And being in the profession I am, I'm an RN. I'm not going to go with birth control is a health issue and it's a right. You know, I'm not even sure health care is a right. It wasn't a right back in the day when the Constitution was written because they didn't have such thing as health care in hospitals. I mean, it was ragtag. You know, you pretty much took care of yourself or you had
to. And not only that, doctors went to your house.
Yeah.
They literally got in their car and they would do the work that earned the money that they're given. I'm not saying doctors don't earn their keep anymore, but they now have huge, huge, huge lists of people, not just a few families to take care of. They now have all these people to take care of, and it's like a turnstile. You go in, you go, they check your heart, the blood pressure, hear your heart, you know, make you cough, let them draw blood, and then you're gone. And then they'll call you a few days later and say your tests were okay or they weren't. And that's like, pretty much the turnstile of medic, you know, they don't have the concern or care that they used to in those days. And my grandmother, I'll tell you, she died on the operating table when she was having her second triple bypass, but she had a stroke. And the thing is, she even remembered back in the 1920s, 1930s, when they would come to the house and literally give her, bring candy for the kids and...
Yeah,
you know, do the whole medical.
And now with the technology, well, and a lot of that rushing those patients through is they have to see so many patients to even break, you know, about to get their money's worth, especially when they're doing Medicare patients. And those uninsured.
Well,
patients.
Now my kids' doctor, they recently were telling me they have stopped accepting Medicaid patients. They used to a while back, but he stopped after this whole thing went through. And he said that was because now he instead of just a half of what he would be getting, he's getting like whatever the government would say he's worth.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, they
it's not even it's not even a regular rate anymore. It's something that the government can change from year to year.
Exactly.
And he doesn't want to do his business that way, so he said he'd rather just drop them off his rolls. And he doesn't think that's really fair because these people do deserve good health care.
Right.
But he also deserves a decent wage.
Well, and they actually lumped radiation oncology in with radiology. Radiology is just the taking of X-ray pictures, and so they were decreasing the rate. They were reimbursing for radiation oncology, which is just sad. And, of course, we treat whether they have money or not. Our doctors are real good about that. But, you know, they're not being reimbursed for the care. And it's not good care. The government does not know how to provide good health care. And if they get a hold of everybody's health care, we are in deep trouble in this country. It is not going to be pretty. It's not going to be good. And it's not going to be nice. And there's a reason we have one of the best, we have the best healthcare in the world. It's because we've had free markets and we've had, you know, these inventions and the technology and the people to provide that. Well, we're not going to have it anymore if this continues with this push for this national healthcare system. And that's going to be a shame. You know, it's a crying shame. Why do they think these laborers come here from all these other countries to get their care? You know, why do they come to the United States? The leaders of the other countries when they're sick. They get flown here for care. You know, it's because we have the best medical care in the world. And yes, it's expensive. It's costly to provide, but we've done nothing to try to lessen that cost. Everything to try to penalize doctors who are providing that care. And that goes into what you said, Billy. They don't have time. They don't have time to spend with you because they have patients booked every 15 to 20 minutes in order to, you know, make that day pay for itself. You know, they just come in. So, you know, they can't take the time like they used to, even when you would go in and they'd sit there and talk to you. And of course, my doctor was never talkative. I had one of the silent types when I was growing up. He was very, very quiet. So some people didn't like that, but I was fine as long as he took care of my problem. I don't have a problem with that. So, well,
yeah.
Haley, thanks for joining me tonight. Thank you, everybody who's been listening. We're on every Tuesday night. Times vary between 8 and 9 Central Time, and if we ever get our computer fixed up, Billy and I might actually hit this on together. It keeps changing my times. I have no idea what it's doing. So we are glad you joined us tonight, and everybody have a good night. Say your prayers and listen to what God's answering for you. Faith, not fear. Yeah. Faith, not fear.
Exactly.
So have a good one, and I'm just going to start some music to take us on out.
All right.
Bye-bye.
A while back, I just needed to get away, and I got in my car one day. It just started heading south. I didn't know where I was going. I just stopped and picked up an atlas so I wouldn't get lost, but I didn't go back to my hometown, but I went in that direction and through a lot of old areas that I'd traveled through, I guess in search of something, in search of a simpler time in my life or whatever. But I went through a lot of small towns that reminded me of where I was raised and the places I'd come from. And it was sad because I realized how much they had changed since I'd been back in those areas. And a lot of places were sad because a lot of them seemed dried up. You know, it was like a lot of the small town businesses and the mom and pop stores and the independence of some of the people who had actually built those towns because of that. They were having trouble staying alive, staying in business because of all the big chains coming in, everything that takes over these days. And I think it's a very colorful and important part of American history, and I hate to see it going away, and I hope it doesn't. And I just wanted to write this song about it, and we made this video in an attempt to recapture some of those scenes and feelings that inspired the song about the little man.
I remember walking round the court square sidewalks, looking in windows, things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry and the old Lee King's Apothecary. They were the little man, the little man. I go back now, the stores are empty, except an old Coke sign dated 1950. Poured it up like they never existed, or renovated and called historic distance. There goes the little man, there goes the little man. Now the court square